Okay, we're going to start off our commission meeting again this morning. I'm Jim Kellogg, president of the commission from Discovery Bay. Second to my left is Richard Rogers, vice president of the commission from Montecito. On left of Richard is Jack Bayless, commissioner from Los Angeles. On my right is Commissioner Dan Richards from Upland. On my immediate left is John Fisher, our acting executive director. And two down from John is Adriana Shea, our deputy director. Over at the table on our right is Sherry Fonbuena and Anita Biederman, and Craig Schumann's sitting on the front row. We have also with us today our director of the Department of Fish and Game, John McCammon. We have Salke Mastriff, our deputy director. And we have Nancy Foley, our Chief of Enforcement Deputy Director. With that, John's going to tee up our first item on today's agenda.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, a few items of housekeeping before we get started. We'll get started. Did I miss it?
I did it again, and I forgot Rick Thalhammer, our Attorney General's representative for the commission.
Okay. A few quick items of housekeeping. Restrooms are out to the right as you're facing the back of the room from the front, off on my right here. Please turn off your cell phones. They have a tendency to interfere with the audio-visual work that AGP Video is doing. This is a meeting conducted under the provisions of the Begley-Keene Open Meetings Act. We ask that you be respectful and orderly, and you may not disrupt this meeting. If you're interested in speaking, please submit a speaker card to our staff up here on the right at front. Comments from the audience and the crowd are not appropriate and would be disruptive. The meeting will be webcast and is actually streamed out live over AGP's facilities, and it will be stored in our commission website too. So if you have audiovisual items to submit, please bring them to AGP. They're up in the front at the left here. And when we call your name for items, please come up and make a line and be ready to go. If you have materials, written materials to give, please give them to our staff on the right. So, commissioners, under the public forum, I have three speaker cards for public forum. They're Louis Zim, Jack Bransford, and Noel Kramers. I'm sorry, that's not public forum, is it, Noel? I'm sorry. We have two speaker cards. Louis Zim, Jack Bransford will have 3 minutes for public forum. Mr. Zim, go ahead.
That's great. I'm usually far-sighted, so I can't quite see, but here we go. Okay, good morning. Distinguished commissioners, my name, as you probably remember, is Louis Zim. I represent the San Diego Fly Fishers, an organization dedicated to preserving and conserving nature in this great state of California. I would like to encourage the commission to support efforts by California citizens to ensure that the California state parks preserve access to shore fishing in the following state parks and beaches: Border Field, Bolsa Chica, Cardiff, Doheny, Refugio, and San Elio. If this shore fishing is demonstrated to result in excessive impact to fish populations in these state parks or state beaches, I would like to propose that the Fish and Game Commission explore imposing a zero retention, catch and release, barbless hooks, and artificial lures only regulation in those impacted areas. This regulation would be easily enforced due to the availability of state park rangers and the easy access for fish and game wardens that the parks provide. Boundaries of these regulations would be clearly seen as they would match state park and state beach borders. In 1972, you, or I suppose your predecessors. The California Fish and Game Commission adopted this concept for wild trout waters. Wild trout waters are managed on a catch and release basis, and nature plays a starring role in determining the population. Today, more than 1,000 miles of streams with self-sustaining trout populations are in the program. This program is the state of California's most successful natural wildlife management program. I ask you to consider this as a model for coastal fish management. Respectfully, Louis Zim, member and past president of the San Diego Fly Fishers. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Jack Bransford, followed by Paul Weakland. And Mr. Bransford, while you're coming up, let me take a few more minutes to give a couple of other items too. Maximum speaking time per day of 10 minutes, and we'll be keeping track of that, so please use your time accordingly. And then one other thing, commissioners, I want to call your attention to a handout that Susan Garcia from the San Diego Sport Trackers Association brought to us. She was not able to be here for this meeting, but she's brought them to us, and I'll have our staff distribute those in a few seconds. So, sorry, Mr. Bransford, but you have time seated to you. Go ahead and get started.
I'm not sure I know how to start this process. Does it start automatic? President Kellogg, commissioners, and staff, welcome to San Diego. Thanks for the opportunity to make this statement. My name is Jack Bransford. I'm the vice president of the San Diego County Wildlife Federation, and I'm making this presentation on their behalf. The Federation is a nonprofit amalgam of local conservation-oriented clubs and organizations, as well as the local chapters of similar national organizations. Our membership stems from some 12,000 San Diego County households, such as Quail Unlimited, and is guided by the basic philosophical concept that, absent contradictory scientific or safety-based data, the public has a right to recreate on public lands. Our membership is dedicated to the management of San Diego County's open space and wildlands for the conservation of our unique habitat and wildlife, as well as for the benefit of the active recreational user. We are particularly concerned about the increasing erosion of the public's ability to participate outdoors in activities such as hunting and fishing. We believe this reality is reflected in the long-standing decrease in sales of licenses. We attribute this reduction in sales of licenses in large part to a lack of access to suitable hunting and fishing lands, much of which is public land. We believe this is a problem that can be corrected by the Commission and department by working together with local organizations throughout the state to halt this erosion and therefore reverse that trend. Looking at the charters of both the Commission and DFG, there is verbiage that would create better results if more clearly stated as to the letter, spirit, and intent in connection with defining and implementing goals. We are hoping that the Commission encourages action in which we would be glad to participate. While the charter says the commissioner's ultimate decisions must reflect not only the biological needs of our fish and wildlife, but also the wishes, needs, and desires of all those who enjoy these resources, this does not appear to be addressed in some decisions. What is the commission's policy and their related thoughts concerning DFG's responsibility to demonstrate a form of effective, proactive leadership by maximizing hunting and fishing opportunities on public lands, and in particular, the lands which are administered by DFG? This should, of course, include a community outreach form of participative partnership with the local community hunting organizations. We believe the Commission should establish an issue policy and define related procedural responsibilities for DFG to accomplish goals that are designed to maximize hunting and fishing opportunities consistent with good conservation. For instance, presently, the DFG does not, as a matter of course, confer with local hunting organizations for agreement on the identification and prioritization of goals that would improve hunting opportunities if accomplished. Why is this? This matter is particularly perplexing when compared to the Fed's current emphasis on working with the public on matters related to recreational access, with notable emphasis on hunting. For instance, the express goals, policy, practices, and procedures mandated by Executive Order 13443 and recent federal legislation such as H.R. 3534 that would enhance hunting, fishing, and other recreational opportunities on federally managed land. Based on anecdotal evidence, it seems that most hunting organizations have little knowledge as to the goals and related accomplishments for their particular DFG region, since this information is not routinely shared with them. I know of only one such possible exception, and that's for a report that's routinely provided to the Sportsman's Council of Central California by DFG's Central Region, and a copy has been provided for your review of that. The information conveyed by this report is said to be both informative and instructional and is much appreciated. The routine sharing of this type of information would do much to alleviate the growing suspicion that DFG isn't applying an appropriate portion of their resources towards protecting and enhancing hunting opportunities. The recent passage of SB 1058, which was widely advertised as intended to prevent hunter-generated revenues from being misused, seems to give credence to this suspicion. Remember, we as both taxpaying citizens and sportsmen and women are concerned about California's natural resources. We understand the reality of DFG being over-mandated and underfunded. They've been asked to do more with less. We support DFG. Therefore, we ask that the Commission help to facilitate the Department in accepting volunteer help to get things done. We understand this need to make sure things are done correctly, but we, as the sporting community, are willing to pitch in and do what
you need to try to wrap up your comments because your time's up.
Are willing to pitch in and do what the department doesn't have resources to do. We just need an okay to go ahead. That concludes my statement. Thanks very much for the opportunity to provide this input. If there are any questions or comments, I'd be glad to provide a response.
Commissioner Rogers.
Thank you for your comments. You know, it's outreach is obviously something that we're all very intently interested in. It has such positive, there's Jordan sitting here, it has such positive impacts. Is there an issue here somewhere that I'm missing? I mean, obviously, if Central Region can do this, have you seen the document that Central Region puts out? What do you think, Zonkey? How does this work?
Well, each region has their set of issues.
Sure.
In Southern California, we've been acquiring a lot of these little properties for a whole bunch of different reasons. And we've worked with these folks, and actually I've worked with him for many years, trying to improve our opportunities, particularly hunting, on some of our lands. The reality is some of the lands were acquired for very specific purposes through WCB and others. WCB is very good about making sure hunting and recreational opportunities are accommodated when they can in some of these acquisitions. Some aren't. Some are so small. The region's been making every effort to provide hunting opportunity, but there's sometimes challenges. What you heard earlier in the year, Brad Burkhalter under Eric Loft, we've gone through a very large, and you'll actually hear some information later, we've gone through a very large land acquisition phase in the last 15 years, and you'll see the data. And we're just now catching up to all that acquisition in terms of land management plans, and outreach has outstripped our capability. So Brad Burkhalter under Eric Loft, we, as you heard earlier a few months ago, we're initiating an overhaul and review of all our wildlife area and ecological reserve regs and uses. And they will be doing outreach all over the state to get input on uses on wildlife areas. And hunting, of course, is one of the activities that is core to our function. The trick, and you can imagine this, these open spaces are becoming increasingly valuable to everyone as those spaces decline. And so it's not just whether we allow hunting, do we allow weddings, equestrian events, off-road bicycles, motocross tracks. There's a lot of interest in these areas, and so we'll be conducting that outreach and getting input, and we'll be looking for providing any opportunity that is ultimately consistent with the purpose of its acquisition and management plans. So we'll be working on that, and our goal is next year early, we'll be presenting you the first cut at that overhaul. And we'll be engaging you frequently on getting input from both the public and the commission.
Okay, Commissioner Richards.
Sankey, just for clarity, I think I heard you say we've been acquiring a number of small pieces over a period of time, but I have seen and I think it was a ranch in South San Diego County that we've had for 7 or 10 years. I mean, as I recall, it was 1,000 acres, several thousand acres. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, Rancho Humol. Yeah. And I didn't mean to imply we're only acquiring small properties. It's a whole range.
Okay.
It's just what my point, and I must have missed it or not been effective, is some of them are so small you can't, for example, allow hunting because the neighboring homes
right.
are within 100 feet.
Right.
So.
And I completely agree. I mean, you know, some of them, I'm not even sure why we're acquiring them, and if we have got them, why don't we don't get rid of them if it's going to be that small and we can't do anything? That's a separate discussion. But on something as large as that ranch, do you know how many acres that was?
I don't recall off the top of my head. And we do allow hunting at some level on that particular property.
Right. I mean, I actually went around it. It was huge.
It's a beautiful property. And
unbelievably good. It just seems to me that those are the kind of opportunities that he's exactly addressing. That, I mean, we've owned it for at least 10 years and probably
Correct.
Longer. There gets to be a diminishing returns point here where it's like, how much longer is reasonable for us to say we're working on a plan? You know, let's have some plan, simplistic as it might be, started, and then see how the plan's working, and then if there's challenges with that plan, modify the plan. But to keep it as restricted in that particular instance, and there's probably 10 of them or more, but at least it seems more proactive to me for us to say, okay, we're going to allow X, Y, and Z, and we're going to do that for 2 years, and we're going to take a look and see how it works. And if it's working, great, and if it's not working, great, but do something about it. But just to not do anything, I think that's where he's coming from. And the truth is it's a legitimate
right.
beef.
First off, there is no case where we're not doing anything. In most of our places, there are opportunities that are offered pretty quickly. Again, some have restrictions. What you will be hearing is one of the things when we acquire properties, the way the regulations are set up, until you have rules, you pretty much can't do anything. And we, the director and several of us, realize that's not really a practical approach. So part of this overhaul is for you to adopt a framework of rules for any new acquisition that allows you to at least have a standard set of activities under certain conditions that we would allow until such time we can go through the management planning process, which can sometimes be very convoluted and lengthy because of all the interest.
Okay.
So that's what we'd be looking for.
Thank you. You are the best, and I love a complete answer. So when will you be giving us that package so we can look at it to adopt it so you can actually do that?
We're looking at spring. We're going to be doing outreach between now and then you will hear either Eric Loft or Brad Burkholter giving you an overview of some of those things. And the idea is we would initiate a rulemaking in spring so that by early summer you would adopt those regulations and they go into effect for the next season.
That's awesome. That's terrific. Do me one other favor. If staff would just get to the whole commission, how much land are we talking about? You know, a list of what we've actually acquired. I'm sure it's available somewhere. If you could get that to all of us, I think that would be helpful. I see John looking here. You have it right
yeah,
handy.
Yeah, the director right? has actually put together a report with all this information.
Good. You're going to give it to us today?
Yes, and Perfect. Part of his presentation is an overview of this exact situation.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. President, if I may add one thing. When Wildlife Conservation Board considers the acquisition of property, one of the key issues that's always inquired about by you, President, sitting on the Wildlife Conservation Board, by me representing the department sitting on the board, is its accessibility for public use and its appropriateness for hunting and public use opportunities. So that,
exactly.
that is a key issue that we address every time.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Sankey. Thank you, Speaker.
We have, under public forum, we have Paul Weakland, followed by George Little. Mr. Weakland.
Commissioners Paul Weakland, several things that we didn't have enough time to talk about yesterday on the no fishing zone, economic dead zone scam that you're pushing down on us, is when will the questions be answered? Oh, yes, you're required by law to listen to us, but just hurry up and we don't have to respond or answer you. We wanted to declare that we need fair and equitable treatment, which you are mandated to give, and that we continually request that an honesty and truth clause be inserted in your documents, because as you heard yesterday, many people are not confident in what the documents. I mean, every time we have a problem, we create a new document. Oh, we'll just forget what the last one, we'll create a new document. You have to wait. We're going to miss another deadline, and we're going to give an extension to aquaculturists and all these people in the department, the yellow-legged frog thing that's been on for 6 years. We get another extension for a year. These things are not appropriate. So when will the questions be answered? And how many traditional and historic jobs are being lost by this MPA thing? That is all. Now, what happened to Mike Sutton? How come he's missing? There's no honor, integrity in missing a meeting.
I told you before, you're not going to have any kind of verbal attacks on the commissioners. What happened to Mike Sutton isn't any of your business.
Final speaker under public forum, George Little, and I just might add that Mr. Little was here yesterday to talk about the MLPA matters and had to leave, and so we're giving him a little time now. Go ahead, Mr. Little.
I wanted to say that I very much appreciate this opportunity. I sat here for 5 hours and had a work emergency. When I came back, you guys pulled it off, much to my surprise. So the speech would have come off a little differently yesterday, because actually yesterday was my 30th birthday. So I guess I'm going to say my name is George Little. And yesterday, October 20th, 2010, was my 30th birthday. And I've fished the Southern California coast since I was too young to remember. And I still fish today. To my count, I've caught over 20 species of game fish off this coast. But there's one kind of fish that I don't think that I've ever caught, and that's an adult fish, a fully grown, mature specimen of any species of game fish. And I guess that that was kind of my birthday wish last night, that I would have the opportunity to catch an adult fish off the coast of California. But I'm 30 years old and I'm an adult myself, and I know that wishing isn't enough, which is why that I'm here. I'm also a trained ecologist with a degree from the state-funded University of California, and I know that the only way that this wish of mine is going to come true is if this commission implements a meaningful system of marine preserves. The IPA is not that system. Speaking from the perspective of somebody who lives in San Diego, our outlook here is bleak. Point Loma, formerly home to the world's most abundant populations of abalone, species currently under emergency protection by the state, is not protected at all. La Jolla's preserve is below the minimum size set out in the MLPA and isn't even large enough to cover the territory of a single giant sea bass, much less restore a healthy population of this iconic California species so that I may someday legally take one of what previous generations caught by the truckload. The Tijuana River estuary is a with-take reserve, which I guess means that the young white sea bass, lucky enough to not end up as bycatch in the purse seines, can go ahead and starve to death. And another with-take reserve at Suwamish as a tacit admission that the area is too small to even pretend that there will be spillover into the nearby waters. I think that we need to decide whether we're serious about restoring California fishing to what it can and should be, or if we're going to punt and perpetuate a lie for future generations. So I encourage the commission to choose the most protective and robust system possible, to the extent that the one on the table right now is map number 3. I would recommend that, but I fully, my opinion is that it should be as protective as possible, and I thank you for your time.
Okay, this concludes the public forum for today, and we're on to agenda item 5. Number 5 is request for, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we have about 10 speaker cards on number 5. After we go through number 5, we're probably going to take a break for executive session, and that will last maybe 20 minutes or so. But we'll go through number 5. It's request for authorization to publish notice of commission intent to amend section 238.5 of Title 14 regarding stocking of aquaculture products. The discussion hearing is scheduled for November 18th right now in Folsom, and the adoption hearing is scheduled for December 16th, 2010 in Santa Barbara. By way of background, commissioners, this was on your agenda, I believe, for May or June, and you asked to hold this over for a bit to give an opportunity for some more input. I'm looking at Deputy Director Mastrup, and I don't know. I'm sorry, who's going to present this from the department?
Yeah, good morning, commissioners. Curtis Milliron from the Fisheries Branch is here to give you an overview of the issue, just to give you some context.
If you could start the PowerPoint for me. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Curtis Milliron. I'm a senior biologist with Fish and Game Fisheries Branch. So I have a short PowerPoint presentation and no way to control it. Is there a controller? Thank you. Okay, I'm here today to present the department's proposal for removal of the exemption of the requirement for private stocking permits in 37 counties of California. Okay, here we go. Okay, I'm going to start off with a brief history of fish stocking, private stocking permits as required in California. This started 53 years ago. The California legislature required that private stocking permits would be necessary for private enterprise or private parties to stock fish in California. Then in 1983, the Fish and Game Commission established Section 238.5 of Title 14, which established the process involved in getting these private stocking permits and the costs. Then in 1991, there was a revision to Section 238.5, which allowed private stocking permit exemptions in 37 counties for 8 different species of sport fish. This exemption is still in place today. However, the department has had concerns about the exemption and the impacts that stocking without any department permits may be having on native animals, especially our recently threatened and endangered species, both state and federal, that have occurred since this 1991 provision went into place. And so the Fisheries Management Committee, which is a committee of department senior staff, fishery staff, as well as wildlife and hatchery staff, that meets quarterly, reviewed this exemption and made the determination that it was in the best interest to meet our mission statement and the species of California that this exemption be removed. That was in 2008. Now, that was not acted on because at that time the department was entering into the beginning and stages of the development of the stocking and hatchery EIR, and that process was going to be reviewing all fish stocking in California, especially the department's own stocking program, but also this private stocking exemption. So the final hatchery stocking EIR did make the determination that, again, these private stocking permit exemptions should be eliminated and that we should come to the Fish and Game Commission and recommend that, which is why I'm here today. That EIR was finalized in January of 2010, and then shortly after, Scott Barrow and myself from Fisheries Branch went to 6 different meetings, locations within the 37 counties, and presented this concept to the interested folks that would be affected. In fact, we sent out letters to the aquaculture community and met with aquaculture development committee and disease committee representatives at meetings and presented this idea that this would be coming forward to the commission. We also had a 7th meeting outside of the counties, and the idea of these meetings was to inform the potential affected parties so that we could get a dialogue between the department and affected parties so that we'd have a meaningful discussion today and through this process. Okay, these are the exempted species. There's 8 of them. 2 of them, the rainbow trout and the Sacramento perch, are native to California. The rest are not native to California, but one thing they all have in common is These are top-end predators. They're great sport fish, and that's why we like to manage for them as sport fisheries, or in our sport fisheries. They're very desirable, and we certainly don't have the intention of not of stopping the stocking or the use of these fish in our recreational pursuits. That is certainly not the intent of this. But our responsibility lies with more than just sport fisheries, as we know. So here we have the California tiger salamander, a recently designated species, or listed species. And one of the major threats to California tiger salamanders, they have several, but one is certainly the introduction of sport fish or non-native fish into their habitats. They are easily preyed upon. One of our a steelhead rainbow trout. Now, rainbow trout are one of the eight species that can be stocked. The steelhead is the sea run or anadromous version of rainbow trout. And interestingly, the department now in our own EIR, through our own EIR mandates, are not able to stock some of the waters that we have been stocking until we come to agreement with our federal partners in management for this species. Rainbow trout are listed throughout almost all of California federally listed throughout almost all of California. There are places where the department has not stocked in 2010 because of concerns for our rainbow trout and the possibility of either genetic or competition or predation impacts on native stocks of steelhead, and yet private stocking has that opportunity to continue stocking in those areas without any oversight. Federally listed California red-legged frog is certainly found throughout throughout the coastal areas and several locations in Southern California, not too many locations in the Central Valley where these the stocking exemptions exist, but very critical locations there. There's not too many of them, and the Fish and Wildlife Service is very concerned about this species, and again, potentially impacted by private stocking. Just last meeting, we made this mountain yellow-legged frog a candidate species for listing. I'm most familiar with the Sierra Nevada populations, but it turns out that all of Southern California is exempted from private stocking requirements. This species used to come down to nearly the valley floor by Palm Springs, Palm Desert, and then in the San Jacinto, San Bernardino mountains. And so certainly within its native range, private stocking is exempted. And then we have this monster, and this is not a photoshopped picture. That's the real thing. Doug Killam really looks like that. He's one of our associate biologists holding this 80-pound prized Chinook, and of course this is a spawned-out specimen, but it just is absolutely one of our most sought-after California sport fish. That's a great shot. That was found this last year. Also, of course, within these 37 counties, this species exists. Okay, so the reason why I'm here today is because the department feels that we are not able to meet our mission statement. I don't feel like you guys need to hear our mission statement again, but clearly for us to manage the fish, wildlife, and plants and their habitats for their use and enjoyment and, of course, their ecological values, we're going to need to have some idea of these impacts. We've now got a good handle on our own department stocking program. We have much less of a handle on the private stocking program. So the proposal today is to first request that the Fish and Game Commission remove the private stocking exemptions in 37 counties for these 8 species of fish. And then secondly, that all private stocking permits would be required to be evaluated, or the site evaluations using the department's pre-stocking evaluation protocol. So in the yellow here are the 37 counties that are exempted. Throughout the Central Valley and then almost all of Southern California. It's a large amount of the state. Now, in contrast, all, of course, the parts that are not in yellow do require private stocking permits, and so we have this inconsistency. Now, this is the pre-stocking evaluation protocol, and, of course, I don't expect you to be able to read that. I, even with my glasses on, I couldn't read that. But I'm going to simplify it and just break it down to what it is. You see arrows going off to the right and then arrows going down to the bottom. If you get a no answer after this first box, then a private stocking permit can be awarded. The first box basically says that there should be no conflict with recovery plans and fisheries management. What I mean by fisheries management in this case is the department may be managing a reservoir or a body of water for a trophy fishery. It may not be appropriate to also stock that water with catfish or bass. Sometimes that degrades the overall quality of the fisheries. And so fisheries management programs may be focusing on one style of fishery, and yet we oftentimes would have a marina operator or a private enterprise that would like to see another style of fishery, and the two fisheries may not always be compatible. This next box, now if you get past any of the next three boxes, then and the answer is no, then you can go ahead and issue a private stocking permit. Or in the case of our own stocking program, the same protocol is used. So is this proposed stocking site in the historic range of any of the species that Fish and Game is concerned about? And it's just, if the answer is no, then the stocking permit would be awarded. The next box simply states that, is the habitat suitable for the species? In other words, it could easily be within a historic modeled range of a species, but the habitat may not be suitable either for water quality, water quantity. It could also mean that there's a biological community present. For example, we might have a fluctuating reservoir that has a robust population of introduced bass or bass, catfish, or bullfrogs. In those cases, we would not expect that our native red-legged frogs would have a chance of being in that habitat. So that would be a biological community present that would preclude, in this case, in this example, red-legged frogs. It's not suitable habitat. A private stocking permit could be awarded. And then finally, is the species present? And so this may actually require some on-site surveys. But even then, the final determining factor here is, would there be a substantial impact if the species is present with the stocking event? And that then is the final determining point that we would get to. If there is not a substantial impact to the species, then a private stocking permit could be awarded. Okay, so this pre-stocking evaluation protocol, what's the process for doing this? The Department of Fish and Game is doing these for our own stocking program, as I mentioned. In many cases, private stocking permits are awarded in order to increase the stocking at a public site. And so if we're stocking and somebody proposes to stock the same species of fish, then they're past the process. We would award a permit for that. So if that's not the case, if there is information available on our files, if we have reports, we know what species are present, there's publications, or DFG is already stocking, as I mentioned, then a private stocking permit could be awarded. Now, if there's surveys that need to be conducted, we initially said this when we went on the road and presented this information in our public meetings, we said that the department would not be conducting private stocking permit evaluations on site or surveys. And we've backed off from that. We have an implementation team that reviewed all implementation facets of the EIR, and we asked the folks around the state, do we want to do these evaluations? Will we go out and do these surveys? And I think at that time we were so overwhelmed with doing our own survey work so that our own stocking program could move forward that the answer was no, we're not in a position to do that. Well, we've done our surveys. We've got most of our sites now back into the stocking program, and it turns out that a lot of regions were actually doing some of these private stocking permit surveys. And so the answer now that we would propose is that it's workload dependent and it's going to be regionally determined. So if a private party wants to have a private stocking permit and surveys would be required, it would be up to the regions to determine if they have staff time available to do whatever surveys may be required. Now, if a private party does not want to wait for the department to do that, or if the department is not available and they want to pursue getting a permit, then they have the option of consulting with a private biological consulting firm. And then finally, I think it's important to note that these permits are not done and they're not reviewed and approved in Sacramento. These are regionally approved, and so you have local expertise involved with the actual review and approval of the permits. And that's why we're doing it, so that we can maintain our quality fisheries and our native species in California. And that's all I have for the presentation.
Can I go, Jim? Richards. Rogers is at the other end. Thank you. Excellent presentation.
Thank you.
A couple questions. One thing I didn't see in there, and I hate to harp on the same stuff all the time, but it's important in my opinion anyway. I didn't see anything on a fee structure there, on what we're charging for the permits, and if we're proposing some modification of that, since I see this was implemented in 91 to begin with. And by the way, I'm inclined to go along with what you're talking about here. I want to hear the public testimony. But what are we doing on the fee structure there, and are we proposing any changes to our current?
There is, to my knowledge, not a proposal to change the fee structure, and the fee structure has been somewhere between $52, $53. I think it's $53, $53.
Okay, and that's exactly what I was afraid of, and so I can assure you, in order to garner my support, we're going to change the fee structure to what it really costs us to do the work. So I would insist, if we would go ahead with this, that you come back to us with a new fee schedule that is more reflective of the costs of actually doing the work, which we are allowed and mandated to collect back. I think that's an important part of this process. Second thing is, I noticed on your presentation, in the event that we're not able to do protocol type studies there, the private contractors could. Does the department pick the private contractor, or does the applicant?
Yeah, this has been a recent discussion that we had internally, and typically we are not in a position to qualify private contractors. We did in our public meeting say that we would not be willing to approve self-evaluation, so there would be some consulting requirement. But we don't have a list of qualified applicant or consulting firms, and I don't think we have a criteria to qualify them. But
okay, I think we should. And I know from, and I'm okay with having a private contractor do the work. But the challenge is, I know when I'm developing something, a city will say to me, "You've got to have an EIR done, or you've got to have some reporting done, and here are who the approved parties to do it." And the point of, but you're going to give the private party is then going to give the report to the city. Mm-hmm. They're not going to give it to the applicant, and then the city can review that and make sure that it's legitimate. So there's no monkeying around with the report. That's the intent of the whole thing.
I think
that we need to, this is a big deal here, and so we need to make sure that whatever, if we're not going to do it ourselves, which I understand we may not be able to do, we certainly want to make sure that the private party reports that we receive are legitimate reports, not one-sided one way or the other, legitimate reports. That's really what the data we need.
I agree, and I would say that there is language in the pre-stock and evaluation protocol that approved protocols for the survey work are required. So there are species-specific survey protocols for most of the species that are of concern here. Mm-hmm. And unless those protocols are followed, then the survey work would not be valid.
Because here's the nuance.
Sankey's been trying to help out.
All right, and here's the nuance to it is, again, and this is in the private sector, and I'm most familiar with what I have to deal with on a regular basis. I pay the fee, but in my case, the city or a county I'm doing the work in hires the work to be done, and then the work comes back to them, so that the contractor is very clear that who they're working for and what their responsibilities are. And their responsibility is to give us a fair report, not a biased report. Not that anybody in the aquaculture business would do that, but just to make sure we have everything on the up and up. So I would hope that our, matter of fact, not hope, I'm going to ask that when this comes back for us to be adopting this, we're not going to do it today, I assume, that the protocol is whatever the fee is, you know, you got to pay to a private contractor. They give that fee to us. We hire the private contractor to do it. The report comes back to us, and then we're somewhat satisfied of its legitimacy.
Yes. Good morning, commissioners. Excellent feedback. I appreciate that. That's one of the reasons we're here before you. Today, just so you, to remind you, we're here to request to go to notice. So this is the perfect time. If you have are looking for specific provisions or options, now is the time to identify those so we can incorporate them. And what I'm hearing, and I will defer to the full commission to give us direction, is, in fact, the commission has authority to set the fee for the private stocking permits. So if you want to see a fee structure that recovers actual costs and then also look at some options on how we can incorporate some kind of independent non-DFG overview, or if we do it, what it would cost, we could build that into the package. Frankly, for the state to step do contracts with private folks right now is very problematic. But we could look at some other options to give the industry some flexibility so they're not necessarily having to wait on us, for because our staffing is limited. So if that's the pleasure of the commission, I would like that direction eventually on this agenda item so we could fix the initial statement of reasons with these options and then go to notice rather than go to notice and then later re-notice. So we will be looking for some feedback ultimately at the end of this discussion.
Right. Well, assuming we get, you know, of course, well, I would hope to get the full commission support on that. But the fee structure particularly, we cannot open a letter, and I mean it honestly, for $51. Nobody can send us one. The cost for us to physically get that done, the true cost is more than $51, and so this is one reason we keep falling further and further behind. So I don't want to, I don't think we can make money. I think it's illegal, but we need to really cover what our true costs are and have a reflective structure, in my opinion. Anyway, thank you.
Commissioner Rogers.
I agree with Commissioner Richards. I think that that is a very good approach. I don't know if we're going to get anywhere near what it really costs us. You know, that may be too much of a chill to the aquaculture group, but we'll see. I mean, you know, I think we need that range, need to understand it. One of the things, Sankey, I would love to. I recently read a very interesting book called, and I don't know if you guys have read this book, An Entirely Synthetic Fish. Have you read the book yet? It was just published here, and Dan's probably very familiar with it. I mean, An Entirely Synthetic Fish.
Specifically,
it's
Rainbow
by
Trout.
A guy named Halvorsen, and a lot of people know about the fish, or know about the book. The book is about the rainbow trout. And the rainbow trout existed in the state of California only in a couple of watersheds. And then in 1880, 1890, what these groups started actually in France called acclimatization groups, started pushing native whatever it happened to be out into where people wanted to hunt them or fish them. And this was all kinds of fish, all kinds of in particular pheasants, you know, Dan, the sorts of things we love to do. And it ended up that the rainbow trout became the world's most populous fish, and it's virtually everywhere, and it started in just a couple of little watersheds in the state of California. One of the things that I would love to see as we enter into this, it's not that I'm such a fool as to think that we could reverse that in the state of California. I'm a fly fisherman. It's a great passion of mine. I love catching rainbows. I revere them. But they don't belong in a bunch of places, particularly where they are in massive competition with the existing trout or flora or fauna in particular. And so I am sensitive to that, and I would love to get a little bit from the department a better handle on that issue. The fact that, in general, it can be said that the rainbow trout is an invasive species.
I had the pleasure of communicating a number of times with Anders Helverson on that book. I'm quoted in the book. I also had the pleasure of being on the Diane Rehm show with Anders and on NPR, and it was an interesting experience. I won't go into that. But rainbow trout are an amazingly successful sport fish. They have a wider tolerance for temperature than our eastern brook trout in the eastern United States. And so they were able to take over a lot of habitat that became excluded because of increasing temperatures in the eastern coast. And from there, it just went worldwide. And so rainbow trout, which actually are native because of the Pacific distribution of our steelhead, they're native to both the Pacific coast and Japan, and of course Russia. So they have a natural, fairly wide distribution, but their introduction throughout the world has been, as in the book, pretty phenomenal. They're not the only ones, of course. As I had up here, 8 different species of fish, only 2 of them are native to California, and largemouth bass, a fantastic sport fish, are also very well distributed nowadays. So this is why we keep talking about endangered species when we come before you, and why we were here last month about mountain yellow-legged frogs. It's not the only thing that they face. Disease is a big issue, and there are other anthropogenic impacts, but our fish stocking is certainly one that we can't ignore, and it is one that we have the most control over, or maybe we will have more control over.
Curtis, may I ask another question?
Yes.
On the aquaculture permitting here, is part of this regulatory actions that we're looking at taking affecting the private lakes where there's private aquaculture stocking, Irvine Lake, Poway, all those guys? Is that part of this?
It would be.
Right now they're not required to have a permit?
Well, you know, there are rule structures about this. There's just the 8 species, so there are other species that would be required to be permitted. And it's in only those 37 counties. But the lakes that you're mentioning, I believe, would be exempt from the stocking permit requirements.
They're exempt today.
Exempt today.
But would this change that?
Yes.
Okay. So the real issue here is, well, I don't know about the real issues. There's a number of issues, but is we have 37 counties that have an exemption right now, and so you want to remove that so that you can get a grasp on it statewide. And it's not to say that people won't get the permits, but just so you can take a look at it.
Correct. And then the second part is that to recognize that we're using a consistent approach to the evaluation of these waters through this pre-stock and evaluation protocol.
Okay. Thank you.
Curtis, to what extent do you think there are watersheds or water bodies in the state of California where it would be wise for us to do what we can to remove the rainbow trout from those areas?
That's not just rainbow, but other species too, and certainly
I was
rainbow.
Just focused on rainbow.
Okay.
But whatever, you're right.
A lot of the work that I've done is in the Sierra Nevada, and a lot of that work is to manage for rainbow trout and other sport fisheries. And really the big job is to determine where are we going to do that versus where are we going to try to get back habitat for our native animals like mountain yellow-legged frogs. In order to get back that habitat, we actually physically remove those fish.
Right.
It's a very difficult and long process, and we've identified, well, let's put it in perspective. There are thousands of fisheries. In my presentation last month, I made note that there are 9 out of 10 fisheries that you can see from an airplane over the Sierra Nevada. 9 out of 10 water bodies that you can see from an airplane in the Sierra Nevada have fish in them currently. 150 years ago, that number was 0. Okay, so big pervasive change there. And a lot of what we do is to remove some of those fisheries, and we've got roughly a couple of hundred throughout the Sierra Nevada identified for potential fish removal to help mountain yellow-legged frogs and other native
species. Are you familiar with the technique, and Dan's familiar with this, in fact, we were just talking about this the other night, are you familiar with the technique that they're using in Montana of putting a chip in the head of a rainbow trout, and some of the chips are worth, how much, Dan?
$1,000.
$1,000. So you provide the sport. You don't remove it ourselves. We provide the sporting community with the opportunity to remove the fish. They turn the head in to, in, you know, DFG version in Montana, and they scan it. And if it's worth $1,000, if there's a chip in there worth $1,000, the angler gets $1,000. I mean, that is a great way to get the fish actually terminated, if you will, in that environment, but do it in a positive way for the angling community.
I was not aware of that, and that's
it's very interesting. Really, you ought to look into that. Dan and I were both saying it's kind of hard to look at a great big beautiful rainbow and kill it, but having said that,
it's actually in Idaho.
I think
the interesting thing was they looked at it, and I'm not so sure I'm looking at the eradication of the rainbow as a good thing. I think after.
No, I'm not suggesting it is either. I just want to look at it.
At some point in time, maybe they are native, but that's for a different discussion. But it was an interesting concept. I think they spent $25,000 or something, which is a pretty cheap program, really. Mm-hmm. And I think they had $5,000 fish, and then $100 or $200, $500 fish, and several thousand $100 fish, and I personally catch and release them, but there are a lot that turn in the heads.
My impression of that, and that really does sound like an interesting program, but I don't think you would ever get to eradication. I think what you could do, though, is get to a reduction in the numbers of fish in a population, which may very well have a growth release effect so that the overall quality of the fishery could come up by a little bit of sustained harvest. In our high elevation waters, we just really don't see harvest at all. Fishing mortality is such an insignificant part of the mortality overall in high elevation lakes. And these lakes, these fish are very long-lived. Brook trout we have documented to living almost to 30 years in high elevation waters, and they may not ever get over 9 inches, and they may never weigh a quarter pound. And so in some of those extreme fisheries, harvest would be a very desirable outcome, and maybe that has merit.
Commissioners, we have a number of speaker cards. Noel Kramer's, followed by Anthony Schuette. I'm not sure that I've got that right. Followed by Rob Ross and Dr. Michael McCoy. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Commissioners. Noel Kramer's with the California Farm Bureau Federation. I appreciate the opportunity to comment on this issue. Farm Bureau comes at this from two perspectives. One, we have members who raise the aquacultural products that stock these waters, but two, we have farmers and ranchers who purchase the aquaculture products to stock on their farms and ranches. So we want to make sure that aquaculture can continue providing these fish to provide the recreational opportunities that California depend on, and that our farmers and ranchers can continue having access in a reasonable way to these fish for stocking. So we appreciate that the department's focus on this issue. It's an important issue, both environmentally and recreationally. And we welcome the spirit that the department has put forward to cooperate with the industry to come up with a solution. And we support the joint effort between the department and the industry in working out regulations. I do want to point out two things specifically. One is a broader issue, but during the listing process of endangered species, typically we see statements that agriculture is a degraded habitat, and so these species need to be listed because they don't no longer have habitat on farms and ranches because of the farming practices. However, then, when the farmers and ranchers want to improve the riparian areas, change their farming practices, we come back and say, oh no, we can't do that because there are listed species on these properties. So I think it's important to recognize that we do need to figure out where and when to stock and how to do that without having an impact on the environment. But let's take a look during the listing process of whether or not this really is degraded habitat, so that we don't come back later and say, well, we can't stock here because the species are there, when originally we thought the species weren't there. And I know the department's been working hard on figuring out voluntary solutions to help farmers and ranchers improve habitat, and we're working with them on that, and we appreciate that. But that's a bigger issue that I think would be valuable for the commission and the department to consider during listing. We also think it's important to look at the impact of not stocking. Sometimes you can put, you can stock fish like in irrigation ditches that will control the grass. And so if we can't stock because of potential impact on the environment, what would the impact be of maintaining those ditches in another way? So I think we need to look at bigger pictures, and we look forward to working with the department in crafting a solution. Thank you.
Thank you. I may have misread this name, and I'm sorry. Anthony or Antonio?
It's just Anthony. Sure.
Okay, thank you. Followed by Rob Ross, Dr. Michael McCoy, and Ken Beer. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to comment on this issue. I am Vice President for Political Affairs for the California Aquaculture Association. I'm also co-chair of the Aquaculture Development Committee that met yesterday. We met with, among others, your Deputy Director, Zonky Mastra, and others of the department. I spoke this morning with Curtis Milleron. I'd like to say that we look forward to engaging them in a conversation to improve this regulation and to modify it in a way that doesn't so drastically threaten our industry. One thing that I would like to bring to your attention is what I believe a grievous flaw in the transition from the EIR to the ISOR that you have before you to approve. And that is that the EIR concerned itself with numerous kinds of groups of species. We had decision species, species of concern, specific species, so on and so forth. And these were the species that were presented to us as species that would be involved in this process by Mr. Milleron and his associates. That was something to be concerned with. But now in the ISOR, if you look at the actual language of the ISOR and the modification and the scope of the regulation to be involved, it includes all native species and any adverse effect. That, in effect, gives the department the discretion to limit stocking almost without limit. And further, it's the beginning of a slippery slope toward some place that I believe the department doesn't even want to have. And that is when, in the future, environmental groups force other animals, including invertebrates, even insects, onto the list of endangered and species of concern, it will be unavoidable to go to the full biological survey of every stocking site in California. That is a conceivable outcome of this. At the end of this, I would like to give my compliments and my appreciation to Deputy Director Mostrup and to Curtis for extending their wish that we get together and create what we hope is a better regulation both for us and for the environment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rob Ross, followed by Dr. Michael McCoy, followed by Ken Beer. Mr. Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. Rob Ross, I represent the California Aquaculture Association in government affairs and legislative affairs. I've been associated with the industry for some time. I know most of the people in the industry. There's a few things you should know. First of all, there aren't a lot of new people in the aquaculture business. So it's not like it's a lot of people are coming into it and don't know what they're doing and don't exercise the greatest degree of professionalism and caution. These are folks that have been in the business for over 30 years for a large part, and they are very conscientious about the effect of the natural resources and where they stock their fish. To my knowledge, as far as inland fish, there have been no negative impacts ever in the state of California by the registered professional aquaculturists. So we have a pretty exclusive group of people, and you're going to hear from them this morning. With regard to some of the economic issues, I guess when we look into that, let's also look into the effect that the aquaculture industry has provided to the state and to the Department of Fish and Game from license revenues that are generated because of the aquaculture planting and the augment of the natural resources by aquaculture products. Of course, you realize that aquaculture involves more than just private stocking. It provides food for restaurants and food for retailers, and we have worked with those trade associations over time, and we're working with them still, to make sure that we can augment the wild resources that are out there with aquaculture products in a sound way. I've had experience over time with regulatory bodies, and you heard the gentleman speak earlier from the Department of Fish and Game that said, you know, we worked on our part. We worked and looked at the stocking that the department does. And then we had meetings, and then they took place in 2010. I think there was a little fallout there in the sense that they were so used to working it and working with staff and working through this and working with the plaintiffs in a lawsuit, they sort of forgot the aquaculture industry and the individuals in it. So we're delighted that the department has agreed to sort of put the brakes on this, and let's look at this in a scientific and practical and economic way that won't devastate the industry and have a devastating impact on recreational fishing license sales and the food industries. Thank you for your time.
Dr. Michael McCoy, Ken Beer, Tony Vaught. Go ahead.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Michael McCoy. I'm the Executive Director of the California Aquaculture Association. And I want to tell you at the very beginning that we appreciate your efforts to protect California's resources. Our association and our members are very much in sympathy with that goal and that important mandate. Indeed, we are very open to the concept of working closely with the department to develop permitting rules and regulations that will allow industry to thrive, but will also provide the necessary protections and indeed the necessary revenues to help the department operate. These are essential things, and we're all in agreement on them. The only concern that we bring to you is the difficulty that we have had in this process up to this point of working closely with the department to ensure that all of these interests are considered together. Now, in the initial process that was put into place, there was great difficulty in getting information out to our members and to other important constituencies that are affected by these efforts to make sure that everyone had a chance to participate in the conversation that needed to take place. I want to commend the department for its efforts in recent months to improve that conversation, to work closely with us to try to develop reasonable and effective approaches to regulation that will benefit all of California. But we want to ask you as a commission, because we trust you for these things, we want to ask you to help us ensure that there is adequate time for the conversation, that is, not to rush regulations into effect so quickly that the conversations won't take place and serious harm will be done to an industry that already struggles in our state, and not to press the regulations forward without including all parties in the conversation, which includes aquaculture producers, but it also includes lots of other constituencies, recreational fishers and other folks. So we're asking simply that we have adequate time and adequate opportunity to participate in the conversation. We appreciate your help on this matter.
Commissioner Richards.
Yeah, hang on for one second if you could. Thank you for that presentation. Very nice. Appreciate it. Couple questions. As the president of the State Aquaculture Association, do you represent the shellfish growers as well?
They are members of our association, yes.
Okay, because we have
Sir, I'm not the president. I'm the executive director. I'm their hired hand.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I'm sorry.
No, it's quite
Well, that's good to know, because we've been trying to get to the right person that represents them so we can actually start to do some new leases with a number of those parties that we keep extending on a month-to-month basis, because we can't seem to get to some consensus on who represents them so we can negotiate with them. So if that's you, I hope our staff's paying attention to that and we can actually get that done.
I will be delighted to help you make those connections. That group of folks also is anxious to work closely with you on this.
Yeah, well, it's been a challenge. Anyway, what I was hearing you say was supportive of the process, not necessarily what the end game is, because we don't know what it is, but you felt you needed appropriate amount of time and input. And is our current schedule and time not satisfactory, or do you feel like something's being pushed through too quickly, or you know, what is there a problem with the process as exists right now?
There has been some anxiety, and this is a moving target that is changing day by day almost now, and that's a constructive thing. But there was for some time great concern on our part that the process was moving so quickly that regulations would be imposed before there was a mechanism to issue permits in such a fashion that aquaculture permits wouldn't be issued at all, and then we would have folks who couldn't do anything.
Okay,
and where we are in that process right now, I'm not sure, but our concern is always to make sure that the process moves at a pace that matches its implementation.
Okay. Thank you.
Salke.
Yeah, just this is a good question, and it's often folks who don't work in the APA process don't always remember this, and I know the commissioners do, but for the public, once you go to notice under APA, you have a full year to work with that rulemaking effort, and during that time, the idea is to take input, generate ideas, and if you have to make a modification to that package, you do that through a re-notification. So you have a full year once you go to notice. But there are significant benefits to entering that process, which I can discuss with you privately if you want to talk more about why that is. So, again, that's one of the reasons we're here asking your permission to go to notice. Engage that. We have a year to work it out. The commission may, at the end of that, decide not to do anything. That's their prerogative. But this is a beginning of a process with a lot of flexibility.
Well, it's that flexibility we want to claim.
Yes, and we look forward to working with the industry. And as also a reminder, both the commission and the department are mandated by statute to support and encourage aquaculture in the state of California. And we respect the industry, and we'll be looking forward to doing exactly what you're asking.
Thank you.
Commissioner Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. President. Dr. McCoy, Commissioner Richards and I are the aquaculture subcommittee of the commission, and I share his frustration with respect to not having been able to get anyone from at least the shellfish side of things to meet with us, and sort of perpetuating a situation where there's a great deal of expressed frustration on everyone's part, but for some reason we keep getting a fade. If that's what they want, I guess that's what they're going to get. But I think it would be very important and very useful, and actually probably useful for your other commentary with respect to this association that you purport to be the executive director of, how effective it actually is. You might help us understand that a little bit better on the shellfish side.
Commissioner Rogers, I'm going to take your comments seriously, and I'm going to receive them as an opportunity for conversation.
Thank you. I will provide
your staff.
Well, that's what we thought that we had provided, but apparently that was not heard.
Well, let me work with my providers. I'm sure we can get folks to meet with you. I'm sure that we can pursue that conversation. I will be meeting with many of them later today, and I will provide my contact information to your staff so that we can make sure that conversation takes place.
Deputy Director Shea.
I just wanted to clarify on the record that the shellfish aquaculture folks have been waiting for us and product from us, and so I don't want there to be confusion. The agreement that we had is as soon as we had a draft lease template that was in a format to distribute, we would do that. They have been waiting for that. In the last couple weeks, we were able to get that sewn up. A copy is going to Ms. Heather McIntyre this week. It's also gone to DFG Legal, and so we expect that to be made available to the folks that you represent, and we are looking forward to setting up a meeting in the next, hopefully within the next month with
well,
all
take,
of the folks involved.
I take that back, Dr. McCoy. Thank you. You can help us with ourselves, apparently.
Well, I just want to foster good communication. That's all I really want to do.
Thank you.
I think you just did.
Thank you.
Ken Beer, followed by Tony Vaught, followed by Donald Crane. Please line up and be ready when we call you. Thanks.
Commission members, my name's Ken Beer. I'm the owner of the fishery. We're a commercial fish farm, and I've been raising fish for over 35 years. I raise sturgeon, largemouth bass, channel catfish, other species. At one time, I was the largest supplier to the Department of Fish and Game for their stocking programs for striped bass, which ended in the early 90s. I find now that a lot of times I give the historical perspective because I've been here for quite a while. And so I'm going to try and avoid being redundant. And just as a little perspective, the aquaculture industry, probably about 80% of the product that we grow in this state is for food and not for stocking at all. And I would suspect that 80% of the stocking that we do occurs in the areas that currently require a stocking permit. That's mainly the trout that are in the mountain areas. So we're not talking about a huge segment of the industry or a huge area. And perhaps it'd be useful to say, what was the original reason for the exemption of the area in the state? And I think it was largely because that portions of the state, which is primarily the Central Valley and the desert regions of the state, the species that are going to be stocked were primarily the warm water species. They're widely distributed in those areas already. If you were to take a set of watersheds and put pins in it, you'd already find catfish and largemouth bass and the sunfish in virtually every watershed in that exempt area. And that was the reason for the original exemption. What are the typical bodies of waters that are stocked? Our farm does virtually no stocking currently, but historically we did. Most of our customers are landowners, primarily farmers and ranchers, and they've built a private pond, and they want to stock a relatively small number of fish. Our other customers are park districts. We stock a couple that support the largest stocking. It's sponsored by the Kiwanis Club, and they get about 4,000 kids that come to an event that they sponsor. My concern here is, frankly, not the impact on the aquaculture industry, which could be significant if the regulations proceed as they're drafted, but it's really on the amount of recreational fishing opportunities within the state. And that's really what's going to be the main impact, because the farmers that have these private ponds, the landowners, are not going to pay an expensive survey to survey for endangered species. I was very encouraged by Curtis's presentation, where he did say that the department now will be potentially doing a lot of those surveys. That was one of my biggest concerns, is that realistically, the people that were our customers, I did not expect be willing to spend the money for a private survey. I think that's my time. So anyway, thank you very much.
You know, if I may, Mr. Beer, being a landowner in this state, I think most landowners would literally have to lose their minds to ask someone in government to come do an endangered species evaluation on their property. I can't imagine anyone doing such a thing.
Well, bingo. That when I first saw the regulations, I thought that's going to be the real issue here. And so I hope that's addressed in a reasonable manner, because really this will be a reduced recreational opportunities. These ponds not only provide fishing, they provide a habitat for a lot of critters in this state that I think, you know, it's in the benefit of the state to have these ponds.
Commissioner Richards.
Yeah, hang on for 1 second. Thank you very much for that testimony, and I love the history part, by the way, and I'm guessing the entire commission does, because we always need to have that perspective, so thank you very much for that. I want to make sure that I didn't misunderstand anything. I didn't hear anybody talking about EIRs here. I heard surveys for specific species that may be in areas. Some areas aren't going to have any, and so that's not going to happen. I, too, heard that the department would be doing that versus a private party, except in
and what I would assume rare instances where they just didn't feel they were able to do that for whatever reasons. So I'm assuming that's the path that we're going to go down. But the critical point, or not on about critical point, but certainly one of the important points here for you would be to make sure that this process is reasonable and is practical on the ground. Because I'm certainly not opposed to stocking or aquaculture or that those programs being available throughout the state, because for many of the reasons that you just said, and I don't think anybody else is, candidly. So the process here and the scoping is important to stay engaged so that it comes back to us in a reasonable, prudent, ultimate process that you can live with. That's what we want to make sure occurs here, and that it's not some something else. The concept, and because we probably would remove these exemptions where we're actually going to start paying attention to all of them, seems pretty reasonable to me. What that process is within that really is going to be between the industry and our department staff to come up with a workable plan. And I'm trusting you're going to be able to do that.
And I would agree. And I would say, again, looking at Curtis's presentation, I don't have any problem with if you find that a stocking would impact an endangered species, then probably that stocking shouldn't occur.
Yeah.
But that's not what the regulations currently say, as Tony Scher pointed out. It says native species, pre-stocking evaluation program. That's a pretty broad universe and a pretty high bar.
And that's why you need to work within that process when it comes back to us for the final thing, to be reasonable and that it's a manageable.
And that's what we hope to do and will be doing.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And what I meant by my commentary was to make certain that in that process, which I'm assuming the industry, since they are the purveyors and the landowners are the buyers, that whatever is crafted meets the smell test of the landowner, so that the landowner would be willing to raise their hand to have whatever evaluation is going to be done. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. I know it's not going
to
work.
Exactly. It's going to have to be practical.
I mean, I don't need to get inside Noel's head to know that that's just not going to work. Yeah. You know? So it's got to be something that the landowners can work with and aren't frightened of.
Right. Exactly. Thank you.
Tony Vaught, followed by Donald Crane, followed by Douglas Elliott.
Good morning. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak. All of us who are involved in this are anxious to get this worked out. I've been raising fish in California for over 32 years, one of those individuals that Rob was speaking about that started out young and has grown through the industry and with Fish and Game as well in determining recreational opportunities in California, and at the same time developing techniques to raise more food in a sustainable and local manner. So aquaculture is very responsible, and they do like to take care of their fish, their property. They are farmers, just like farmers like to be stewards of their land. We like to be stewards of our water. So thank you again. And I'm hearing some good discussions here, things that I've been concerned about that you're bringing up are the very things that we are concerned about. So that's good. I'm also the California Aquaculture Association Board, have been for 30 years. I'm a member of the Aquaculture Development Committee from its inception. I also assisted in the development of the aquaculture code that addresses aquaculture in California when we put that together. So I've been very involved for the whole time with Fish and Game. Fish have produced have ended up in food and in recreation. I probably speak to and sell more fish to pond and landowners than anybody else in the state. I talk to them every day. People call and say they want 100 fish, 1,000 fish for their pond, for their grandkids to catch. They want all those opportunities on their property. They want to control mosquitoes with their fish. They want to control weeds with their fish. They want to provide habitat for birds and deer and everything else on their property. They're all very environmentally concerned. And so we try to do that for them, and the process has worked very well up to this point. My concern is that very concern that if we make these regulations too onerous, then they will not be engaged in the conversation. They will not call. They'll either move fish from habitat to habitat, from neighbor to neighbor, from wild to their pond. There are opportunities to buy fish out of state that aren't legal. All those things don't allow Fish and Game to have any kind of control on what's going on. So that's one of my major concerns, and I want to make sure those regulations are easy, affordable, and that people are engaged. And otherwise, it does no good, and we can't enforce them either. Also, the destruction of critical habitat is just really a big deal. I mean, these ponds will dry up. People won't put fish in them. They'll dry them up. The water that comes out of them will not provide habitat downstream for frogs and salamanders. Maybe a pond will have an area where some predation will take place. But that water that leaves that pond creates a lot of habitat for everything else and the wetlands below. So those two points are probably the major ones. You'll hear from lots of other of us to fill in. And we just thank you again for the opportunity. So.
Thank you.
Donald Crane, Douglas Elliott, George Osborne.
Commissioners, my name is Don Crane. I'm president of Crane Fisheries. We've been registered aquaculturists for 25 years in the state. We've been involved with a program for more than 10 years with the Department of Fish and Game for stocking the waters of the state in seven counties, roughly 28 lakes, for a program called Fishing in the City, administered by Ethan Rotman. The stocking has gone on for at least my portion of it for about 10 years. And as best I can tell, because of their lack of inspection of the farm, without any problem. In other words, if it were regulations were complaint driven, there would be no regulations for my farm, because we have had no complaints. I would recommend that the commission and the Department of Fish and Game extend the exemption for the 37 counties and for warm water fisheries in the valley floor. Thank you.
Douglas Elliott, George Osborne, and Peter Streffinger.
Thank you. President Kellogg and honorable members of the Fish and Game Commission, my name is Douglas Elliott. I operate recreational fishing, fee-for-fishing operations in Southern California. My operations are probably the largest in the state and may very well be the largest in the nation. I fish literally thousands of people every single month. I purchase my own fish. In fact, I purchase over $1 million worth of fish each and every year to stock my lakes. We patrol, we regulate, and control our own facilities. And as a result, we get no assistance from the Department of Fish and Game, from the state, county, or city operations. As a result, by design and by designation from the Department of Fish and Game, I have operated as an aquaculturist for over 30 years. However, we are fee for fishing operations. I am not a hatchery. There are many lakes in California that operate under aquaculture licenses, so they're actually permitted. And in that regard, they're told what they can stock. However, if these proposed regulations are placed into effect, it would be impossible for my lakes to comply with these proposed regulations, or for that matter, probably any of the other lakes or even some of the hatcheries. Specifically, these proposed regulations for aquaculturists require the testing of every species of fish in every year class for diseases and quarterly investigations for invasive species. Now, this is the problem. My lakes would be impossible to seine. They're a quarter of a mile wide, probably a half a mile long, and 60 or 80 feet deep. So even if I could catch every one of these species in every year class, the cost of DNA testing to test for these diseases and for invasive species would be totally and completely prohibitive. But here's the point. It's totally and completely unnecessary because my fish don't go anywhere. I don't sell fish. I don't transport fish. I'm a fee for fishing operation. My fish are placed in there and fishermen fish them out. Now, there are many problems with these proposed regulations, not limited to the ones that I've mentioned above. They need fine-tuning, and they need to be have input from the stakeholders. I am terribly impressed and enthused by the willing of Sankey Masters to work with us to solve these problems. And I ask you, the members of the Fish and Game Commission, please give them the time that we can work through these problems and come up with workable solutions that will ensure the operations of our hatcheries and ensure the stocking of fish in this great state of California, thereby ensuring recreational fishing for our citizens. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hank, Matt. Just one comment, really.
Yes,
first off, thank you. Excellent presentation. And I am aware of the I don't know that it is actually the department's recommendation at this point on the although I've heard this before, that every single fish in every lake every year is tested. Of course, that is absurd and impossible. And so I would doubt very seriously. First off, I'm even surprised if that is actually what it says, because we haven't seen it yet. But if it is what it says, I'll be even more, well, it won't ultimately pass the smell test, certainly with me, and I would guess the whole commission. It's an impossibility. So as I'd mentioned to one of the previous speakers, the key here is going to be making sure that you're adequately engaged in the process here, so that we can come up with an absolutely workable system, so that the many private lakes out there that have fishermen on it who don't buy California fishing licenses, which that's why you don't have a whole lot of DFG people there helping out doing things, because you're getting a fee, which is fine. I'm all good with that, but there's no fishing license required here, so it's not necessarily something we're going to put our limited resources into research. But anyway, point of it all is you need to make sure you're engaged so that we don't end up seeing a regulatory package that comes to us that's unreasonable.
Thank you very much, and we're anxious to work with them as well. Thank you very kindly.
Totally agree with that. Go ahead, Joe.
George Osborne, Peter Streffenegger, and Paul Weakland. Mr. Osborne, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Good morning, Mr. President, Commissioners. George Osborne, representing the California Association for Recreational Fishing. Please remind me in the future not to follow Doug Elliott as a speaker. I don't measure up anywhere near his passion for this. I'm also here to assure you that that the association is engaged with the department, and we will continue to be engaged and work through this process. We've had our first meeting with the department, discussed issues at hand. We've agreed to furnish the department information on stocking and species and where they're stocked that the department's never had before, because they've not been engaged in that business. We've already got our second meeting scheduled for the first part of November, and we intend to, again, maintain that engagement. Our goal through this process is to address the environmental issues that were raised in the EIR and issues that are important to the department, while still allowing the industry to thrive. It's really that simple, and we look forward to working with the department in coming to a successful resolution that we can come back here, hopefully relatively soon, and say, you know, here's the proposal. The department's written regulations that we can support enthusiastically.
And thank you very much for the opportunity to address you. And that's also less than 3 minutes, Mr. Kellogg.
Peter, Paul Weakland, Ray Heimstra.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Peter Struffenegger. I'm with Sterling Caviar in Sacramento. Been in this aquaculture business for over 30 years. I take Zonkey's point seriously that we have a year, but it took us a year to get into this mess, really. And I don't think a year is enough time to work through the details. There are a lot of details, and I think you'd be surprised if you read some of the details that some of the things that we're talking about or what you may have heard are in fact true, that are unworkable. And it's very reassuring to hear that there's a smell test that this has to pass. But I would urge that we don't get backed up against the wall by implementing this and then saying we have still a year to work through the draft. The year passes very quickly. The department has limited resources. The industry has limited resources. Everybody's backup is up against the wall right now. From the industry side, because of the economy, from the department side, because of budget cuts, I would urge you to wait until we have something that's a little bit more reasonable, that gets us closer to where we want to be before we start the clock ticking. We've had a long history of working with the department successfully. It doesn't matter who the people are. We've been, you know, our industry, it doesn't matter who the individuals are. It doesn't matter who the individuals are with the department. It's been a long, long history of successfully working. It's been successful. It's been beneficial to the department. Mr. Elliott was very modest. His lake sold, is the single largest seller of fish and game licenses. You've got to take things like that into account before you start saying, well, we're going to do a fee for structure, for cost. So you collect one guy and he pays $1,000 because that's what the actual cost is to do the evaluation, and five people drop out of business and don't stock the lakes, and how many fishing licenses won't get sold? There's a balance to this. So thank you.
Thank you.
If I may. I think, Mr. Struffenegger, one of the things that you can stand down. It's okay. I'm just going to make a comment on what you said. I think one of the things that's important about entering into a time-sensitive process is actually bringing people to the table. Because it's been my experience in government that if we don't do that, people don't necessarily buy into the seriousness of the thing, and they sort of stay back, and then at the last minute, the 11th hour, they complain that they weren't informed, or they weren't involved, or they whatever. So I'm actually a real devotee of a one-year time frame or something like that, where virtually everyone's feet to the fire. And if, in fact, at the end of that time period, someone can convince us that more time is necessary, I'm sure my fellow commissioners will give them more time is necessary. But I applaud going into a time-sensitive process because, in my experience, that's the only way it works.
Salky, did you?
Yeah, I heard the last person who testified and Elliott, there seems to be some confusion I'd like to clear up that may cause some more comfort than there might be now. When you originally had this issue served up to you back in June, I think it was, there were two parts. They were referred to by the presenter, Neil Manji, as phase one and phase two. Many of the comments that refer to disease testing, et cetera, we're part of phase two. What you have before you is only the phase one. We are not dealing with phase two at this time, and we don't know when we will. We just wanted to let you know those are issues. There's a lot of science going on. We don't have answers yet. So that is not before you, and as you correctly pointed out, Commissioner, those things aren't in the reg package because that's not part of this rulemaking. But again, I agree. It's a process I think we need to engage. People need motivation to solve problems, and I think it's appropriate to move forward. We have time, and as of always, in your rulemaking package, there'll be the no-change alternative, and it's your pleasure on ultimately what you want to do.
The only thing I was going to say is I agree with what Richard said. You know, I'm completely comfortable with starting a process and having a year. That's a lot of time, and if it's a big enough issue to people, they seem to drill down and start to pay attention to it, so otherwise, nothing gets done. So we've got to get a kickoff here. So,
Paul Weakland, final speaker on this is then Ray Heimstra. Mr. Weakland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. So after 60-something years of aquaculture in California, we're finally going to start to begin in a year to think about doing something. Well, it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. Your fish and game presentator said fishing is insignificant take. Fishing mortality is not a problem. What about earthquakes and flooding, which are predominant and periodical here in California? Nothing has taken into account the devastating earthquakes or the floodings like we had the last few years, where the aquaculture facilities were inundated and they lost lots of fish into the waterways. Why don't we cover these things? Now, the California golden trout, it's on its way to extinction from outplantings. We have prime examples of what has happened already. But we're going to forget all about that. We're going to have a fresh start. In a year, we're going to start thinking about doing things in another year. What about their past performances and conduct? Oh, we'll forget about all of that. We're just going to start fresh again. Now, outplanting of abalones in the ocean, we learned something, didn't we? We learned that we introduced diseases like withering syndrome, catastrophic epidemic that killed off large numbers, the whole populations of 7 different species of abalones. But we don't get to learn from that. No, forget that. Because you've purged from the files, eliminated from the records all of these failures. What about the Trojan gene? The Trojan gene has been found that it could be less than 1 in 100 million fish that come from aquaculture to have this Trojan gene that destroys the gene pool and fouls the genetic reservoir of our native species, just like the golden trout, the example. There's a mechanism in nature when too much genetic diversity is present. It negates all spawning. The spawn turns to acid. Large die-offs occur. It's nature's way of cleansing and purifying itself from these introductions and outplantings. Oh, but that's a conflict with our scheme to sell stock and farm fish. So we forget that. We're starting fresh. We're forgetting all the bad things that happened in the past. So this outplanting and aquaculture is likened to ecological sabotage. It's environmental terrorism and crimes against nature. What are the real costs? What are the liability? What are the responsibilities? Oh, well, we're just going to forget everything and start fresh again in another year. Again, it is not nice to fool with Mother Nature. You say you want California to be brought back to the way it used to be. We want the oceans like it used to. Well, you can't do that without plantings because of the diseases. Now, what is the failability of the decision tree, the evaluation metrics? Who guarantees that there are no mistakes, errors, everything is correct, and the requirements are just? What about the court cases that we've recently had? We've ignored that completely. Don't want to talk about those things, a pike, a tilapia, a barramundi. An ERI is appropriate.
Time's up.
We request that an ERI be done.
Final speaker on this is Ray Heimstra. Mr. Heimstra.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ray Heimstra with Orange County Coast Keeper. I'm here because we're working with NOAA and DFG and a number of other NGOs to start an abalone restocking program specifically for green abalone in the Southern California Bight. So one of the things that we've done is apply for a private stocking permit. One of the things that surprised me is that there wasn't even a paperwork for a marine stocking paperwork. We were told that they really didn't have a procedure for us to move forward with the permit and that it would take possibly a year for them to figure out, you know, how to move forward with this. So I just wanted to, as we're moving forward with this, we need to design a program that takes the appropriate steps and all these type of things. But I hope that special attention can be paid to restoration of threatened and endangered species such as abalone in the marine environment. And I just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you very much.
This concludes public comments on this item. Staff has a motion, Commissioners, if there's no more discussion, and Deputy Director Shea is prepared with that.
Okay, let's hear the motion.
So suggested motion is that the Fish and Game Commission hereby authorizes staff to publish notice of its intent to amend Section 238.5 Title 14 CCR regarding stocking of aquaculture products to include two items that I thought I heard the Commission indicate their desired regarding the permit fee structure and also the management of the biological analysis, whether it be through private contractor or through the department.
So moved.
Okay, I got a motion.
I'll second it.
A motion and a second. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That's unanimous, and it'll be recorded as such.
So to summarize, Commissioner Rogers moved, Commissioner Richards seconded. The vote was 4-0 with Commissioner Sutton absent. Commission, that finishes agenda item 5. We have very few more speaker cards left, and our discussion earlier was to adjourn to a brief executive session.
Yeah, we need to do our executive session next.
Okay, and so for members of the public, it's always impossible to predict the time length on this, but I'm going to go a little bit out on a limb and say 20 to 30 minutes. I don't think it's going to be real long. Okay, so as the President announced, we're resuming the Commission meeting. We've come back from executive session, and we are on agenda item 6, which is request for authorization to publish notice of Commission intent to amend subsection B, and is it 1.5 or 15? 1.5, thank you, of section 7.50 of Title 14 regarding Alameda Creek sport fishing. Deputy Director Sankey Master with the Department of Fish and Game.
It's good morning, Commissioners. Just real quickly, during the Commission's February 2010 meeting under public forum, an angler had requested the Commission allow catch and release fishing for bass and catfish in ponds in Arroyo del Val adjacent to East Bay Regional Park District's Shadow Cliffs Recreation Area in Pleasanton. These ponds are fairly popular bass and catfishing locations, are important for recreational fishing access. And at this time, there's no steelhead or trout are found in these ponds, and the department believes allowing catch and release fishing in this location is highly unlikely to impact any salmonids. So we support the proposal. You have the package in front of you, and this is a request to go to notice. If you have any questions, I'll attempt to answer them.
No questions or comments.
No speaker cards on this item. So if you like, you can, staff has a motion. Staff has a motion, if you'd like.
Okay, let's hear the motion.
Motion is that the Fish and Game Commission hereby authorizes staff to publish notice of its intent to amend subsection B1.5 of section 7.50 of Title 14 regarding Alameda Creek sport fishing regulations.
So moved.
I got a motion.
Second.
And a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it, and this should be recorded as unanimous.
4-0 vote with Commissioner Sutton absent. Commissioner Rogers moved, and Commissioner Richards seconded. Number 7, we do have one speaker card on this, Commissioner, so I'll introduce it. Discussion and possible adoption of proposed changes to the recreational and commercial groundfish fishing regulations for 2011 and 12. This is involving section 27.20 plus a bunch of other sections in Title 14, and those will be identified as part of our agenda analysis record. By way of background, Commissioners, we've gone to notice on this. We had our public comment hearing on it, and we're now at the stage where we're ready to consider adoption. Exhibit 7 in your binders has documents, letters, and emails from people who are interested in this matter. I'll call your attention to that. Deputy Director Mastrip, do you have anything you want to say, or should we just start speakers?
I'd just like to really quickly provide a quick overview of what you're adopting, largely because this is good news, and I know lately we haven't had a lot of good news stories. Basically what this is these are fish managed by the federal government and the state of California cooperatively. Groundfish have been in a rebuilding mode. It's a success story. We've gotten things under control, and things are recovering, and this is reflected in your rulemaking package. The lower table are the existing regs, and we're proposing for ground fish, the red highlighted areas are going to get substantially more time on the water to fish because of improved fish stocks, and the southern and Mendocino counties will have the same seasons. The other things that are going on is depth restrictions. We're going to allow fishermen to go a little deeper from 20 to 30 fathoms in the California Cod Conservation Area because we feel we can avoid impacting cow cod and provide additional fishing opportunity for shelf rock fish species. The size and bag limits, we're going to be, this package would decrease the lingcod minimum size from 24 to 22 inches and concurrently the fillet size because lingcod are doing very well. And we're also going to increase the, as likewise cabazon's doing better, and we're going to increase the cabazon bag limit from 2 to 3 within the 10 fish rock cod limit. And also for simplification and consistency, we're allowing short basin spear fishermen to fish for lingcod year-round, and lingcod season for boat-based anglers would be consistent with rockfish, which will really help anglers at sea and enforcement deal with a very confusing section in the past when those were different, and some other minor gear restriction revisions. The other main item is the allowable catch trip limit for cabazon for the commercial fishery. You will see that the TAC, the total allowable catch, is going from 152,000 pounds to 326 plus 1,000 pounds, a substantial increase. And then you'll see we worked with the industry and broke out that added fishery in the seasons as described. And that's a quick rundown of the options. If you have any questions, I'll answer them.
Thank you, Sonke, for a positive report.
It's good news.
Don't act so surprised.
Public comment.
Two speaker cards on this, Joe Xline, followed by Kevin Nakata. Speaker time is still set at 3 minutes, and I presume, Mr. President, that's where you'd like to be?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, please, sir.
Hello, I'm Joe Xline, and I'm from Oceanside, representing Oceanside Anglers Club and our over 250 members. I'm very glad to see this regulation go through, and hopefully you pass it. The confusion out there on the water with the lingcod seasons not linking up with the rest of the rockcod season was, I had 5 to 10 radio calls a day I would answer. The lingcod open, lingcod not open. It was very confusing for the fishermen. I'm also glad to see that management of these species is actually working. You know, and they're rebuilding, and it's allowing us more opportunity as fishermen to go out there and catch these species, which are valuable to us as recreational anglers. And I do urge you, you support it, and you do pass it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin Nakata, and that's all the speaker cards I have on this item. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner and members. I'm in support of this Title 14.
Excuse me, you need to give your name again for the record.
Kevin Nakata.
Thank you.
I'm in support of your Title 14 and the ground fish regulations. I am glad to see that their numbers are coming back. I'm pleased to see that regulations are working. I wish the same consideration would have been taken in consideration of the MPAs. However, I'm glad to see that the recreation is working as far as management goes. Thank you very much.
This concludes the public comments we have on it. Commissioners, if you have discussion, this is the appropriate time. Otherwise, staff has a motion.
Okay, let's hear the motion.
The motion is lengthy. It's moved by the commission pursuant to the authority by Section 200, 202, 205, and several other sections of the Fish and Game Code, which will be identified in the meeting summary, and to implement, interpret, or make specific Section 97, 200, 202, 205, and several other sections of the Fish and Game Code, which will be included as part of the meeting summary, hereby amend Section 2720, 2725, and several other sections of Title 14, which will be included in the meeting summary, to be consistent with and this is of Title 14, regarding recreational and commercial fishing regulations for federal ground fish and associated species for consistency with federal rules.
So moved. Also moved.
But I have to look it up. I can never. Sherry's really good.
But I still need a second.
Second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. That will be recorded as unanimous as well.
Okay. And I missed the second. I'm sorry. Who seconded?
Mine was the second.
Oh, okay.
Who moved it?
Who moved then? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the motion's passed unanimously 4-0. Item number 8, commissioners, is possible adoption of proposed meeting schedule for 2011. Steve at AGP, I believe you have a slide that you can show on this on the screen of the meeting schedule for 2011. Anita, I think you have some handouts for that. And basically what happened is last meeting we brought to you a proposed meeting schedule for 2011. It's now showing up on the screen right now. We've taken your suggestions from last meeting and we've put together a much fuller schedule right now, and I can go over that very briefly. Last meeting, we had locations in Sacramento for February and August, and we kept those on. Staff is proposing that we look at holding the March meeting in Folsom, the April meeting in the North Coast area to deal with North Coast MPAs, perhaps, and the May meeting in McClellan. Commissioners, we understand that you would probably like to have some meetings at other locations, perhaps in your hometowns and that, and we wanted to get your input on those possible locations and dates. And then the last thing I want to say is that you also asked staff to look at the possibility of one-day meetings. And so if you look on the left-hand column up there under date, we've put an asterisk next to several meetings, the March meeting, the September meeting, the October and November meetings, which could be one-day meetings pursuant to your direction to try to do that. And it might be appropriate to pick two of them or something like that and give us some direction on it. At any rate, we wanted some input from you.
Mr. Chairman or President.
Commissioner Richards.
I would personally recommend two different things, or not recommend, I'd like to see a couple things. I think we need, if we can do these things in one day, we should. And so I would like to see March, September, probably November and December as one-day meetings. I think four in a row is probably too many, and so as a catch-up, maybe we do September, October one day, and then November a two-day. Although we got Thanksgiving in there, everybody's got some time off there. So maybe it's better September, November, and December is one days, but October is a 2 days. So we can, if we end up getting piled up a little bit, we've got a 2 day meeting in there. And then I would ask the commission to consider the May meeting in the Upland, Ontario area, as I'm fairly sure I will not be at the June meeting. And
I hope you're ready for Cinco de Mayo. The commission will expect suitable festivities.
I can probably arrange that.
So any other
only comments?
Any other commissioners or staff that would like to throw something at us?
Thanks, Jim. Sankey and I were just talking, and December is usually a pretty beefy meeting. It's when all of our fish regs are, we usually have a pretty full schedule in December, so I'm a little concerned about going down to a one day on that, but that's my only input.
And I'm open about the Santa Barbara meeting, you know, whenever that would fits in for everybody, that's okay. Fine.
Okay. We have one speaker card.
Oh, okay. Good. I'm just going to say me and Jack are going to be non-confrontational commissioners on it. We got speakers.
We have one speaker card on this. Kevin Nakamata.
Kevin Nakata speaking. I believe that one of the that another location should be added. The southern coast should also be allowed to speak on these meetings. Driving up there would be very inconvenient. That would be my main concern. I believe several issues need to be readdressed for the 2011 meetings. Funding methods are unsettled, and they must be clearly presented at the meetings with slides, numbers that are open to the public. I think the public also needs to be notified of defined boundaries on MPAs if decision is made. And I think future meetings should also, they need to address scientific finds on the success of MPAs. If those findings are not showing success, then reconsideration is in order. Every meeting.
This is about meeting dates and locations and not necessarily the contents of the meeting, so let's focus on that, please.
All right. Other than that, the location, I think, should be moved to more southern coast as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim? Okay. It just seems like...
Commissioner Bay.
Opining on this, the location, Sacramento, Folsom, McClellan, that seems clustered. Can we host? I'd love to host one in L.A. one of those days. Is there some reason why we're so Sacramento, Folsom, McClellan?
Yeah, I was going to give just
that's
a little
of
bit.
Me, I wanted them all in Sacramento.
No. Commissioner Bayless, staff made these proposals because we knew that these three facilities, Folsom and McClellan, we knew immediately that they were available during these dates. And this sets us up for the first part of the year.
Yeah.
So we made it from that simplistic approach. We know that we want to go around the state. We understand that.
Okay.
This would set us up for the first couple of months of the year. But we can adjust that, and we're certainly willing to do that.
Just so. Offering up, I'd love to host a Los Angeles meeting.
Okay.
We have always been pretty consistent in moving the meetings up and down the state until we ended up with a budget problem. Then we couldn't, in order to cut down on travel and everything, we had them pretty much centered around Sacramento for a long time, and that's what we're slowly getting back to, moving around.
Great. So I'd just love to host the March one in Los Angeles, if possible.
Yeah, Jack, I think that's terrific, and I think we should do that because I get the budget thing, but it's a big deal for the South, people in the South, to get up here, and so every second or third meeting to have one down there, up north, and out in the Imperial Valley. We haven't been there in a while, and so toward the end of the year, we ought to be looking at something in that neighborhood, and... but I think March and April's terrific, and in May in Upland, Ontario is good, and then figure it out from there.
I have March in L.A. area, and we'll try to do that. I have May in Upland area. Then I had one-day meetings. Again, Commissioner Richards, if you would, one-day meetings were...
Well, I think given what staff said, and unless anybody has something different, the March meeting, seems like everybody's okay with that. And then let's see, if we did December as a two-day, maybe we could alternate these. And I just didn't like four of them in a row. So if you said December is a two-day, October is a two-day, and September and November are one-days, then that should allow us to continue to timely do our business.
Yeah, June's possible one day.
Perhaps one day.
By the way, September, I'm offering up Santa Barbara. Usually pretty good weather. Should be good.
Okay.
There you go. Perfect.
Okay. And we want a general direction from you, commissioners, and I appreciate that input. The one other thing that I would throw out here is we put asterisks on these ones that we hope we could do in one day, and depending on what the regulatory load is, that could complicate doing a one-day meeting, and we may have to come back to you and say that one of those meetings has to be a two-day, and if you'll give us the latitude to come back and bring that information to you.
There's been very few times that we approved the calendar at this stage and stayed with it throughout the year. So
Yeah.
This just gets us started.
We do have some publication requirements, and that's why we're asking to try to kind of get this started, and I certainly appreciate your input on this.
Okay, moving right along.
Number 9 is receipt of legislative reports. 9A is a receipt of the report from the Department of Fish and Game. I'm looking at Director John McCammon because I don't see Susan LeGrand in the audience.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fisher. Mr. President, Susan was not able to make it down for this meeting, so I have the updates of the governor's signatures, which was the last pending issue from the last report. AB 1995 gains concerning the implementation of the ALDS program, the Automated License Data System program, was signed by the governor. And that program is currently in rollout. That is, of the roughly 1,200 organizations which are going to be selling licenses in 1,600 locations throughout the state, those machines are being shipped and the employees are being trained as we speak. So, and you can today buy your fishing and hunting licenses through the ALDS program in 16 locations, mostly departmental offices, although we have some trial locations. And that will be ramping up so that in December you should be able to buy them through the ALDS system at 1,600 locations statewide. The AB 1349 COGDIL, providing for experimental populations, established an experimental population enhancement of survival permits for the spring run Chinook salmon in the San Joaquin River, necessary for us to comply with federal reintroduction plans, which are federal and state joint reintroduction plans, which are currently going forward in the San Joaquin River for establishment of a new fish population or recovery fish population in 2012. So that is moving forward, and that was signed by the governor. Commission supported bills, in addition to those were departmental sponsored bills. The commission took action supporting AB 979, which was by Barry Hill, which was vetoed, and that would have said that you're 8 meetings a year instead of the current statutory 10. For the commission, and 3 rather than 2 in Sacramento. Same issue that you discussed here. The governor vetoed that, determining that the current 10 meetings, no more than 2 in Sacramento, was the appropriate distribution of meetings for the commission. AB 2376 by Huffman, which is, we're calling the Fish and Game Strategic Planning Bill, that was signed by the governor. We have a meeting scheduled with Mr. Huffman to begin outlining how we're going to go about implementation. Part of what you're going to see today under the director's report is a initial packet for implementation of that effort. So we're working on implementation, was signed. SB 1058, Mr. Harmon, providing for hunting and fishing fees, and actually the way we do accounting for them and the collation of some of our specialized accounts, that was signed by the governor. So we now have the upland game bird account, a specialized account, and the big game management account, 2 accounts instead of, I think, 6 or 7 that were folded into those. So it helps with a little more efficiency in departmental accounting. Was signed by the governor. Other bills of interest. Booming while lightering, that is the point at which ships receive fuel from other ships. Lightering is the process. There was a bill to require booming for that. It was vetoed by the governor and felt by our OSPR function not to be necessary. Could be done regulatorily or in seas which were appropriate. Wasn't justified in other circumstances. AB 408, Saldana on lobster management, was vetoed by the governor. However, lobster trap configurations, AB 29, was signed by the governor. So we have technical trap configurations now which comport with departmental guidelines. AB 2063, Chinook and Coho salmon being the state fish, was vetoed by the governor. And AB 2503, rigs to reefs, providing for decommissioning of oil rigs in the state waters, was signed by the governor. Fishing gears, SB 21, Sumitian fishing gear bill, was vetoed, and SB 1179, providing for 2 free hunting days a year, was signed by the governor. We will be bringing action back to the commission to implement that one. So that basically is the outcome of the legislative year. if you have any specific requests, I think there's a report in your binder. I'd be happy to look them up quickly if you need information.
Okay. Got one speaker card?
Yes, we have one speaker card on agenda item 9, Mr. Paul Weakland.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Do we have the
9B, consideration of commission positions on closed proposed legislation. And I'm assuming that we go on to 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right,
agenda item 10, receipt of Department of Fish and Game informational items. And ladies and gentlemen from the public, I want to let you know that we'll go through 10A, B, C, all the way through F, and then take public comments at the end on number 10. And 10A is receipt of the director's report. Director McCammon.
Mr. President, I wanted to bring two issues to your items to your attention. We're handing them out now, so they weren't ready for the binder and not ready for any action specifically, but they're for your information. One is, and both the items are in response to questions we've received from commissioners. The first one is Proposition 21 implementation and what that will look like, and if you'll roll the 10A item. So several commissioners have asked the department what our proposed use of Proposition 21 dollars would be. This is the State Park and Wildlife Conservation Trust Fund established by the imposition of an $18 fee per vehicle registration in the state. Gives you free park access, but the department is directly involved. The use of those funds would be 85% for parks to offset their cost for having hosting citizens of the state for free. 7% would be for Department of Fish and Game wild lands management is the phrase that's used in the legislation. 4% would be to the Ocean Protection Council, specifically geared towards implementation of the MLPA. So it's for the administration of the MPAs is what the standard says. And that 4% is $20 million. The 7% for the department is $35 million. In addition, 2% would go to the Wildlife Conservation Board to provide conservation grants to local public entities. So there is quite a bit of involvement of issues which you're specifically interested in with this Bond Act money. Let me tell you a little bit about why we're included in this effort. Basically, the department has 1.1 million acres. We've spent $1.2 billion in acquisitions over the last 60 years, mostly from bond funds. We have a very limited management capacity. We have used these lands for their ecological value, for the preservation of threatened and endangered species, and for providing hunting, fishing, and public access for public lands. As you can see in the chart, this is the acquisition trend. And beginning in the mid-80s, there was an aggressive additional commitment of public funding towards acquisition of lands, and that has resulted in the size of the land configuration we have now. In addition, you'll see here, and this was in response to an earlier commission question, the department manages 1.123 million acres, 720 various locations throughout the state. And it's literally from coast to coast, from north to south, from east to west. So we're all over the state. Second largest landholder in the state. We have had only, however, up till now, very limited management capacity. With a new influx of funds will allow us to become basically better neighbors, is the way I perceive these dollars. The department will recommend their use to the legislature and the governor's office, and the governor and legislature will determine how that's to be used. So it's not going to be just up to the department, although we are preparing a program and recommendation for how they'll be used. I guess one of the kind of key things that is important to me, just because of my background, is local fees and assessments. Part of being a good neighbor is paying your taxes. The department is obliged under a program called Payments in Lieu of Taxes to pay local governments for the offset loss of tax revenue that occurs from the state acquisition of lands. And we haven't paid that bill in 9 years now. So the legislature has not appropriated the funds. Therefore, we do not have the capacity to pay those funds. My perception is our first obligation is to be good members of the community and reimburse the county governments, by and large, where those lands occur. In addition, we got to come up to ADA standards. We need to provide for fencing. We got to take out invasive species, which are propagating on our lands and moving to neighboring farms and so forth. It's just bad neighbor policy stuff. We need to fix that. In addition, so we'll address public health concerns. We've got long-term management obligations on these lands. We've, in the cases where we've gotten them for mitigation and we're supposed to be managing threatened and endangered species, our capacity to actually do that management activity and to monitor it so that we know we're succeeding is very limited, and would use these funds for that effort. In the packet that was handed around to you on this page, there's a proposed budget for the use of the funds that would come to the department. So that's in response to the question then for that we received on that issue. And I think that's all of the presentation on that. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if you had them.
Yeah, I have one question.
Commissioner Richard.
On the Prop 21, which it looks like it's trailing right now in the polls, but we'll see what happens. Is there anything in that that precludes the legislature from reducing our current funding levels by the amount of money Prop 21 would generate?
My understanding of that is in the case of parks, it's explicit that the general fund commitment to parks would go away and these funds would replace it. In the case of all other uses, there is no such equivalent expression. However, and the lawyers tell me that there would be a good case because there's no equivalent expression, that it can't be a maintenance effort. It has to be an enhancement. I'm not sure that that I think that at the end of the day, that's going to have to be fought out in the courts.
So essentially, how much money is it supposed to generate?
$35 million for the department.
And so basically the legislature could say, you got $35 million from this, therefore we're going to reduce your budget by $35
million. Yeah, and there's a real problem with that because
I know there's a problem, but they could can do that.
Yes, although I am informed that there are groups of folks in the conservation community who are arranging things or aligning things so that they can pursue that not happening. But.
Well, that's nice that they're trying to do that, but that's different than what's allowed, is my point.
The debate is what's legally allowed.
Yeah. Thank you.
I do have one other item. We handed out a top priorities package. This is kind of answers a couple of things. One is Commissioner Richards has for a year and a half now asked what the department is doing in various areas where we're not doing well or where we're doing things well and kind of what the breadth of the department's responsibilities are. So this report is specifically to address the commissioner's concerns about the many functions and tasks facing the department. However, it's got some limitations in that regard. It is also to begin the discussion with the Huffman organization with the implementation of that law about where we go from here. So it's got multiple purposes. It's only a snapshot in time. These are the issues that are facing us this year, this 6 months, or this month. It's not the issues necessarily which faced us 10 years ago or which will be facing us 10 years from now. So it is a snapshot in time. I think it covers pretty well, however, that current snapshot in time. It includes, I started it on the cover memo with the legislative acknowledgement in Section 710 of the Fish and Game Code, which is that the legislature finds and declares the department has in the past not been adequately funded to meet its mandates. That is still true today. And in effect, this document will portray that. In no case do we say, and if you give us more money, we'll fix it, because the priorities change based upon where the money comes from and how it's geared. The range of issues facing the department encompasses the entirety of our mandated activities, which run from oceans to mountains and from water to wildlife. I mean, we're involved in virtually everything that happens in the state of California, and you'll see looking through these issue papers that that's reflected in the concerns and issues which are unresolved, which are arising to the top today. Again, we've avoided saying in these things that if you just throw money at us, we'll fix them. If you give us resources, and I can't define to you today what resources it would take to address these issues, we would work harder at them, more at them. I'm not too sure they're all resolvable. Some of them reflect the inability of the public to come to a consensus about what the right direction to go. And so some of these issues may or may not be resolvable over time. We thought it was worth providing you this snapshot, give you an idea of the depth and breadth of the department's efforts, and to engage a conversation about how we move forward from here. So, we will be putting that on the commission's internet site as well, so those will be available to the public.
Terrific. Thank you, John, very much for that. First off, before I forget about it, I want to tell you how pleased I am to see this ALDS thing moving forward. I remember several years ago at my second meeting, a staff member got up and talked about how he'd worked on it for 13 years and spent $4 million, and we were nowhere near getting ready. And myself, along with the commission, didn't think that that was going to be workable, and you got put in charge of that, and I commend you for getting. Now, I hope it works, by the way. I'm assuming it's actually going to work.
It's working so far.
And but I really commend you here, and we'll have a little bigger celebration when that's truly online. But that's good stuff. Now, the second thing is I'd like to ask, and thank you for this report. I had a chance to preview it a little bit last night, and it's very well done. And I would like to ask the president and the commission to consider having you do an actual report to us instead of this snapshot, for not only us but for the public as well, about a little more in-depth presentation on this, because this is forward planning. This is exactly what we should be, among the many other things we do. I'm not saying we shouldn't do the other things we do, but these are the kinds of things that I think this body should be doing as the commission, giving direction to the department on what those priorities should be, what you see them to be today, and then what we see, so that we can work together to accomplish those goals. So I think November might not be the best meeting, given we may have a very short membership there. But if we could do that in December, I would like to see that on our agenda.
Be happy to accommodate the commission's direction.
So I'm putting down agendizes for December.
Okay.
Well, I think that that's assuming the December agenda, which is going to be probably pretty full, can accommodate that. I mean, let's make sure that that's true. I mean, you haven't scoped out the December agenda yet, have you?
I don't have the complete December agenda figured out.
I mean, this is a very important, as Dan points out, a very important thing to be doing. So.
And my expectation is that we'll have MLPA on the agenda for December, and we probably will do that on one day and do other items on the next. So we would try to make this scheduled on that second day, on the other day, and call it an important item. I'm hearing you say that you think it's important for discussion. Okay. Ten B.
Yep.
10B is an update on tilapia and aquaponics. And by way of background, I believe that there was a public forum comment at one of our recent meetings about putting this on the agenda for some discussion for a department update. And Deputy Director Sankey Mastrup is here to do that.
Yes, Commissioners. Good afternoon. Heather McIntyre, our aquaculture acting aquaculture coordinator, will give you a brief presentation on this issue of tilapia and aquaponics. We've been meeting with some of the representatives to figure out where we go with this, and Heather will give you some detailed background.
Good morning, Commissioners. Again, my name is Heather McIntyre, and I'm the acting aquaculture coordinator for the Department of Fish and Game. And I have a brief informational item for you today on tilapia and aquaponics. The department has been receiving more inquiries regarding aquaponics in the past 6 months to 6 to 12 months, and so it's something that we're preparing to deal with. And I have my thing here. Wrong button. Do I have a good clicker here? Ah, there we go. Aquaponics is a form of agriculture that puts fish in tanks, and then the wastewater from the fish is provided to the plants. The plants utilize the nutrients in the wastewater and cleanse it, and then the water is provided back to fish. These are typically closed systems, and both the fish and the plants are provided for human consumption. They can vary in size from anything from a fish tank in a garage to large commercial productions with fish in raceways. There are several advantages to aquaponics. It's a very efficient production method. It's a very good use of water, and the systems can be made biosecure, which is important from a species standpoint. Currently, aquaponics, where fish are commercially produced for human consumption, are being required to become registered aquaculturists. There are smaller facilities and those that are in closed systems with no discharge to state waters, no restricted species, are not currently required to have a permit. There are three important genera of tilapia that are utilized worldwide. Two of these we have in Southern California, those being tilapia and Oreochromis. There's a reason that they are one of the most widely farmed freshwater fish. They grow quickly, they grow well in marginal waters, and they reproduce rapidly. The tilapia that we're seeing here in Southern California can survive in both brackish and fresh waters. They have a wide water temperature range that they can survive within. They do well in low dissolved oxygen situations, and some species can actually utilize atmospheric oxygen. The adults are opportunistic feeders. They eat what's available and what fits in their mouth. They reproduce rapidly, and they're very prolific. There are established populations of tilapia in Southern California, primarily in the Salton Sea and in the Colorado River system, and adjacent waters with those. So we do have them in the waters of Southern California. Tilapia readily hybridize. There are no genetically pure strains of tilapia found in Southern California, and they tend to be bred for market characteristics, which makes it very difficult to identify these fish by physical characteristics, because when you look at them, they kind of look like the restricted species that we have for tilapia. They can only be identified by genetic testing. Currently, Title 14 in the restricted species section has four restricted tilapia species. One of them, Tilapia zillai, we allow in specific Southern California counties. No other species of tilapia have geographic boundaries, and no other species of tilapia are restricted. The Fisheries Management Committee in the department has been discussing tilapia quite a bit lately, and we do have concerns. There are concerns with escapement of these tilapia into northern waterways. Whether the survival be for a single season or for multiple seasons, we still have concerns with competition for food and habitat and disease transmission into Northern California waters. Hybridization also provides a plethora of biological concerns. We don't know exactly what the biological tolerances are for these hybrid species. And again, we are concerned with the minimal regulations that are currently in effect for tilapia, and they are available in live markets throughout the state. So all of these things in concert have fisheries managers concerned about tilapia. What are the next steps? Right now, we are clarifying the permitting requirements for aquaponic setups and distributing that information statewide so our staff know what's going on. We're also providing that information to the public. The Fisheries Management Committee is still evaluating the magnitude of the risk of allowing tilapia statewide, evaluating the biological concerns, and we will be developing, with the intent to develop, regulatory recommendations. And that's what I have for the informational item. If there's anyone here who has public comment, they can provide them directly to the staff or email them to me, and they will be taken into consideration during our evaluations.
Thank you. Commissioner Richards.
I have one question. On the very beginning of your presentation, you talked about closed systems, and I forget the word that I saw there that got my attention, but it said generally no discharge into the water or something like that, mm-hmm. indicating to me that we actually have some instances where we do allow discharge of the water.
No.
Can you go back to the beginning there?
What the slide said was that I'm speaking of aquaponics generally, uh-huh. and that they are closed recirculating systems. I'm not aware of any that have discharge. I'm assuming there may be some out there. Those facilities are not permitted at this time.
Okay. So that was just kind of covering that maybe we have some illegal ones that we're not aware of.
The broad range of potential operations,
okay, but
yes.
But we don't allow it.
That is correct. We don't allow discharge into state waters.
Thanks.
If I may, Mr. President. I don't know if everyone is aware. I'm sure most people are aware of this if you're a history buff at all, but aquaponics were discovered thousands of years ago by the Chinese when they noticed that gathering under silkworms were koi. Big carp. And then they figured out that rice and the whole closed system, and they actually ended up producing silk, carp, and rice all in an aquaponic situation. And they've been doing it literally for thousands of years.
Absolutely.
And here we come in, what, 2010? This is interesting.
The new and exciting.
Brand new idea. You're right.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for your time.
10C is update on rulemaking package for boundaries of the Southeast Farallon Island Special Closure Area. Deputy Director Mastrup.
At your September commission meeting, you, of course, authorized the department to go to notice with the rulemaking, and it's out there, and it's scheduled for adoption in December. We did have, at that time, you heard that somebody was looking for a permit to do shark viewing. We have not processed a permit because we haven't had really a formal engagement. Staff have been working with the proponents, but there's a bunch of questions of whether we even have authority to issue a permit and whether that permit would put the state in at any liable risk and also violating federal Marine Mammal Act provisions and migratory bird provisions. So at this point, we're not planning on issuing a permit, and the proponents haven't really worked with us much on it either. So we will assume this rulemaking, when it's adopted in December, will fix the problem further next season. And as a reminder, I think we projected an image of Farallons. There are still lots of places for them to go and view sharks. It's just, as a reminder also, this was an error in the original MLPA rulemaking for this area, and you have a rulemaking before you to fix that for a decision in December.
D, update on Law Enforcement Division, Deputy Director and Chief Nancy Foley.
Thank you, Commissioners. Nancy Foley, Chief of the Law Enforcement Division. I have three quick updates for you. The first is on our hiring. We started hiring these new people about a year and a half ago. They started going through the background process, and we were able to pick up three laterals that will go through our field training program probably in the next 2 months. They'll be going through 8 weeks of fish and game specific training starting in a couple of weeks. And then over the last 2 days, 3 days, we've been interviewing candidates, and we gave conditional job offers to 44 potential game wardens that would start the academy in January over the last 3 days. So that's good news for us. And at the end of completion of that academy, not taking into account retirements, we will be pretty full. We got 7 new positions in this new governor's budget, and we will utilize those 7 new positions in this hiring as well. Lobster opened in Southern California. I always try to do something regional when I give my report. Lobster opened earlier this month. It was not good weather and the visibility was poor, but there was a surprising number of violations that we saw. In San Diego and LA counties, we wrote over 100 tickets on opening weekend for over limits and short lobster. So that was rather surprising given the conditions that were out there. And to show you the diversity of the skills and talents that game wardens have, we have several game wardens in Southern California and some in Central California that are tremendous free divers. They are a part of the 100-foot club where they can dive 100 feet, you know, with just breath hold. Well, one of these wardens was on the lobster opener, and he had a trainee, and he saw some divers that were starting preseason, so they were trying to get a jump on everybody else. So the warden looked at his trainee and said, "Hey, you take the wheel." Took off his uniform. He had his board shorts on underneath, and he dove in the water and went down to contact the divers at about 40 feet in depth. And he waits till he sees them take lobster and put him in his bag. This is all breath hold that he's doing. And then shines his light on them, holds up his badge, because they have a little whiteboard that has a badge on it, says game warden, turns it around, and the first one, he points to the number one, and it says, "Give me your game bag." And the second or third one says, "Ascend to the surface at a safe rate. I'll meet you there." And so he went to the surface, swam over to where the other diver was, went down, did the same thing, contacted that diver who also had lobster prior to the season opening, met them both on the surface, and wrote 2 tickets. So that's pretty amazing. And that he's not the only game warden that does that. We had 5 underwater cases that were made by our game wardens during the lobster opener. We also had one person that thought they were going to get away, because as they were asked what a rope was hanging over their boat, the person said, "I'll bring it up." He leaned over. They noticed something unusual. He brings up just a clasp and nothing on the end of it. Off came the uniform. They dive down to the bottom of the ocean and bring up a lobster trap. So these game wardens have some incredible stories, and I'm very proud of them for the work that they do in trying to protect our resources. And then last, we've been talking about National Geographic working with us for about a year now, and they continue to buy more and more shows. Their first show will air November 28th on the National Geographic channel sometime in the evening. Do I have any questions?
Oh, yeah.
Commissioner Richards.
Chief, thank you for the report. Always informative. When we ticket a violator, have we developed a system where that notice goes to our licensing, automatic licensing that we're doing now, so that we pull that license from them and then there's, you know, we're able to track them, or are we able to do anything like that?
Yes and no, to different parts of your question. If they are suspended or revoked, that goes into the license data system. And then if they try and purchase a license, they will be red flagged and they won't be able to purchase that license. Also, if a person is revoked or suspended, they go into the Wildlife Violator Compact, which then prohibits them from whatever violation it is in the state of California from doing that hunting or fishing activity in other member states of the Wildlife Violator Compact. We do not have the ability to track each and every case that we make. If they go to warrant, they are also put in the wildlife violator compact.
And when we ticket someone for too many lobsters or too small, whatever, is part of our ticketing a revocation of their license?
It depends on the case.
Just depends.
And the court. Some courts we have great success with, some courts we don't. If the person is an egregious violator and we don't have success in the court, sometimes we have the opportunity to bring them in front of the commission in the commission process for a revocation.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You bet.
Thank you, Nancy.
10E, update on wildlife and fisheries programs. Deputy Director Mastrup.
I'll make this brief. One of the things that the wildlife program we're working with the regions have been doing, as you know, the new budget, we suffered a significant hit to our lands program. And so one of the challenges has been how to maintain hunter opportunity on our wildlife areas. I think the good news is largely we're going to reserve or preserve almost all of that opportunity. We're going to be doing a lot of extra shifts, et cetera. Which is going to be a challenge under the no hiring and no overtime executive order. But the good news is it looks like we're going to be able to accommodate our traditional programs almost completely intact. And that's all I have for now.
10F, other. I'm not aware of any other items to cover, so we have public speakers. Mr. Tad Smith, followed by Paul Weekland.
Good morning, or good afternoon. President Kellogg, members of the Fish and Game Commission and Department of Fish and Game, thank you for your time. My name is Tad Smythe, and I'm the owner and operator of Desert Springs Tilapia, an aquaculture facility near Dateland in southwestern Arizona. We produce over 1 million pounds of tilapia nilotica, or Nile tilapia, per year, and sell them both live and fresh on ice to retail markets, restaurants in Arizona, California, Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, Idaho, and Canada. Each year we ship over 700,000 pounds of whole fresh on ice to California. I want to go back just for a second because what I'd like to talk to you about is relating to 10B. Which Ms. McIntyre just spoke about. I'm here today because you are discussing rules and regulations concerning aquaculture, and I would like to open with you a dialogue regarding delisting tilapia nilotica from the Restricted Species in California Code of Regulations, Title 14, Section 671. It seems there is a growing demand and market for live Nile tilapia, and I would like to seek your support to allow the live importation of Nile tilapia into California. I've also provided a letter outlining some of my points, which I know that you're not familiar with the letter yet, and I hope that I can, at a later time, discuss with either your committee or Ms. McIntyre or members of the commission on how we can move forward with this dialogue. Currently, it's my understanding that California allows tilapia mozambicus, tilapia zilli, and tilapia honorum to be imported, produced, and transported and sold alive within California, but not Nile tilapia. We're almost at lunch. I know that you guys have had a long 48 hours. So rather than go through the rest of my points here, I just want to thank you for giving me the time and like to introduce the concept and hope to seek whatever next step is involved in this process, whether it be working with the commission or subcommittees on how that I next make this move to delisting this species.
Okay, I think the next step for him would be to try to get together with the aquaculture subcommittee and then go from there. You can contact our staff and find out when the appropriate time for that would be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Other speaker on number 10, Paul Weekland.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I am the holder of a California State Park pass. It was given to me as a benefit. What, if your Proposition 21 passes, compensation will I be given to make up for this benefit? All right. Your tilapia, aquaponics. What about earthquakes, flooding? These things are not in any of the documents. These are real problems here in California. We've already had an experience of flooding when these aquaponic closed systems were inundated by floodwaters and the species were released. The department says, oh, the genie's out of the bottle, Pandora opened the box, and, you know, we just forget it, we're going on. But these disgruntled employees that have been known to be subversive and taking these and releasing them into the wild, these things you have, again, eliminated from the files. The records are clear that this has happened in the past. They are readily hybridized, not easily identified. This is aquaculture. It is a disservice to believe that it's anything but a closed system aquaculture. But let's give it a new name and separate it, and we'll confuse everyone and everything like that. Now let's talk about the Farallon Islands, a special closure. This is the North Central MPA. An error was made. We're still dealing with the North Central MPAs because errors were made. But we don't want to extend the public comment period on the South Coast because, you know, there are more errors that are going to be made there. There is no science or public comment before the insertion of this special closure at the last minute. At the last moment, it is real special, all right. Now, this shark viewing thing, they say they have a federal permit and it's going on. They just courtesy said we'd like to apply for a permit, but they're told they don't need one from you since it's federal waters. You might want to look into that. We are not utilizing the resources effectively or efficiently, the Farallons. Who benefits? Who profits? Commercial fishermen are only service personnel accessing the resource or fishes for and to their rightful owners, the citizens of the state of California. Historic and traditional jobs are being lost by these MPAs. Fish markets, restaurants, transportation, processing, packaging for the consumers. This Farallon Island thing needs to be explored. You did not have any science for your special closure. It was a 300-foot closure for divers when we were utilizing the Farallon Islands before the moratorium that still hasn't been fully explained. This 300-foot closure was a seasonal closure. We were gracious enough to compromise on these by the feds when they took over the Farallons so that their bird watchers and their scientists and their marine studies could go forward without any hindrance. They have not showed us any science from those 300-foot closures. Now it's 1,000-foot with no science. You need to revisit this.
Paul, you have used a total of 7 minutes. Now you have 3 minutes remaining for the day. Commissioners, this concludes item 10. 11 is commission informational items. I am unaware of any informational items. Deputy Director Shea, anything from you? Sorry. Nothing? Okay. Nothing on number 11 then. I have one speaker card on number 11. Mr. Weakland?
No,
okay. Number 12, subcommittee reports. 12A is the Marine Resources Committee, and Commissioner Vice President Rogers, go ahead.
I co-chair the subcommittee along with Commissioner Sutton, and we had a very active and I thought quite remarkable meeting here just quite recently in Santa Barbara. The Commission's Marine Advisor, Dr. Craig Schumann, will let you all know what happened at that meeting. It was really something.
Great. Thank you, President Kellogg, members of the Commission. I'm Craig Schumann, Marine Advisor. Before I update you on the MRC meeting, just want to reiterate what Director McCammon had mentioned earlier, that the two legislative items that were recommended for support by the MRC and subsequently supported by the Commission, AB 2125, Marine Spatial Planning, AB 2376, Fish and Wildlife Strategic Vision, were both signed by the governor. So we will continue to track those through the MRC and report back to you on their implementation. We had a MRC meeting on October 12th, last Tuesday, in Santa Barbara. I'm in the midst of preparing a detailed summary for your next briefing binder and also for posting on the website. I'll update you with some of the highlights. It was a very diverse meeting. We had a lot of things on the agenda. We had an update on the North Central Coast abalone survey results. This was brought to you at your June commission meeting by the department. There were some current concerns that the survey results would indicate that we had reached triggers in the abalone recovery and management plan, the ARMP. Fortunately, we did not reach those thresholds, although we are still very close. So we brought that to the MRC as opposed to bringing it to the full commission. The recommendation from the department was to adopt a precautionary and proactive approach to keep us from reaching those triggers. The MRC agreed with that and worked with stakeholders, and the department will be bringing a request for authorization to go to notice on a regulatory package at your November meeting, so you can keep an eye out for that next month. We had a report by the MPA Monitoring Enterprise. Dr. Sherry Riccia, the executive director, updated us on the development of the plan for the South Coast MPA region. They had a series of workshops in July, excuse me, to introduce the MPA Monitoring Enterprise, describe the planning process, and invite input on perspectives and priorities. And they've scheduled another series of workshops in November. They just released those dates, November 8th, 10th, and 15th in Santa Barbara, Culver City, and Carlsbad, to gather input on the draft monitoring priorities and metrics. They anticipate they'll releasing the RFP for baseline monitoring in early December, the draft of the monitoring plan for public review in early 2011, and then submitting the monitoring plan to you for your consideration and potential adoption in spring of 2011. We had a discussion on the incidental take, and this was both for Kellett's Whelk and black sea bass. We've talked about Kellett's Whelk here in the commission in the past. This came about through our discussions with the rock crab fishery. There are still concerns regarding the emerging fishery for Kellett's Whelk and the lack of any regulations. So based on MRC recommendations, I'm going to work with the department to bring to you a request to designate Kellett's Whelk as an emerging fishery, and that would then give you the authority to enact regulations to monitor take of those species, of that species. So that will be forthcoming probably early part of the new year. We had a proposal from the Southern California Trawlers Association for resumption of seasonal trawling for California halibut in Monterey Bay. So this came, I believe, in your August meeting and was referred to the MRC. Just for as a reminder, the commission does have authority to authorize trawling, although there's a little bit of uncertainty as to whether the commission has the authority to do so in the waters of Monterey Bay or just in the southern in this California halibut trawl grounds in Southern California. If the commission determines that the trawling meets specified criteria, the MRC did not feel they had enough information at that time to make any recommendations. And was intrigued by the efforts set up by Assemblymember Monning in Monterey under a Monterey Bay Sustainable Fisheries Working Group. So this is a group of fishermen, legislators, the City of Monterey, the Harbor Master, members of the environmental community, who are working to evaluate the most sustainable way to catch halibut in Monterey Bay in an economically viable manner. So we will continue to track that and try to support that effort as best we can. We had a discussion on the use of mechanized equipment to pull hoop nets. This was another item that was referred to the MRC back when you were adopting the regulations for hoop nets. We had a long discussion about mechanized equipment to pull hoop nets, other issues associated with that, such as the use of electronic bait, the use of non-mechanized equipment but pull assisters, such as davits and blocks and those sorts of equipment. It was determined that this was a much bigger issue, ADA issues, accessibility, something that we didn't have the capacity to take on in this time. It would be most suitable to be addressed during the lobster FMP that should be coming in the next couple of years. However, we did discuss the low return rate of report cards. Per the department's report for 2008, there's about a 20% return rate of the lobster report cards, and this kind of struck a chord with all of us. I know it strikes a chord with me. The department agreed that this was an issue of concern, and we're requesting commission authorization for me to work with the department on a regulatory package and bring that to you for authorization to go to notice. Other than that, we had a couple of presentations on fisheries for barred sand bass and kelp bass. That was referenced yesterday in oral comment. and also a presentation on fishery certification on how MPAs can be used to gain credit in certification programs. So we're really just looking for authorization from the commission to work on the lobster stamps.
Any questions from my fellow commissioners?
Mr. Rogers?
Nope. We do need the approval of the commission to bring that forward, as Craig suggests. But I also want to emphasize a little bit about the sort of mini MSC or MSC light presentation that was made by the dean of the Bryn School, Steve Gaines, and Chris, one of his professors. That discussion was really interesting. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think we would all want to accomplish is marine stewardship certification of all of these artisanal fisheries that we have on the coast, so that they could get the world recognition and get better prices for the fishermen on a per-pound basis for what they bring in, and get the world recognition of being sustainable. I think there, you know, the devil's in the details, but and the Bryn School has got some very good ideas, but they're working their way through it. But if they accomplish this, what we could end up with is whole ports, like, for example, since the meeting was in Santa Barbara, virtually all the fisheries in Santa Barbara gaining marine stewardship certification as being sustainable. And what that would do is in terms of advantage and marketing advantage, be rather remarkable. So anyway, we're making some very interesting process. One of the problems with MSC certification is it tended to be on bigger fisheries, like the Alaskan pollock fishery or something like that, where you've got millions and millions and millions of dollars associated with it. So the, $300,000 to $500,000 or more to get certified was an issue, but it wasn't a killer. On these small artisanal fisheries, that you literally could not do that. So they're working on how to make that, as I said, a light touch. I think it's very, very good work. Anyway, so we do need the, you might restate what we need from the commission.
Well, were there other questions? So what we're looking for is so the MRC is requesting the commission authorization for me to work with the department to develop a request to go to notice for the report cards.
I'm certainly in support.
Yeah.
That'll be a great, we can even do this off on ALDS, which is going to be great.
Exactly. And
really a great use of ALDS.
Based on discussions with Deputy Director Mastra, we can use ALDS to track folks. And, you know, again, the devil's going to be in the details on what we actually do.
Exactly. I mean, ultimately, what we want ALDS to do is provide us with really as close to real-time information as we can get on landings and what's going on out there, you know, so that we can really tighten up this loop. It can be very, very powerful.
Okay. Commissioner Richards has a question.
Craig, as usual, very efficient and thorough report, and I appreciate it. How much longer do we have you? As I remember, it was a two-year plan or something like that. Is that right?
Yes, my current contract is up at the end of this year.
This year?
The end of December, correct.
Okay. And where did the funding come from? I don't even remember.
This funding was a contract under RLFF.
The RLFF. And are we in discussions on continuing that funding, or?
We are not. I think Adriana can address. She's been pursuing other avenues of continued support.
So based on everyone's desire to keep Craig on board, we're looking at some additional creative financing and are looking at being the recipients of a grant from the Ocean Protection Council to the commission for Craig's professional contract services.
Okay.
And I believe that's up in front of the OPC for consideration and approval in November.
And I want to clarify, it's for a marine advisor position, not necessarily for me.
Yes. Well, yes.
Right. Please keep me apprised of that. I want to know where that's going. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Craig.
12B, Altauscher Committee. The Altauscher Committee met in September, and we reported to you on the results of that meeting at the September Commission meeting,
We don't have a meeting scheduled in the near future, and I'll wait for some direction from the subcommittee members on the commission before scheduling a meeting. 12C is aquaculture.
Dan, you want to take that?
Yeah, I think the only update that we have is we have directed staff to get together with various state organizations that represent various aquaculture folks to see if we can get a meeting scheduled to start dealing with these water bottom leases and the issues that we have there. So we're continuing to work on that, and it's precluding us from actually starting to extend these things. So we're anxious, as I'm sure the leaseholders are, to get that resolved.
Well, D is other, and I'm aware of no other ones. We have one public speaker card, Mr. Weakland, number 12.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I was at that MRC meeting. Not so rosy like they said. First of all, the department has 118 marine advisors. There's 118 marine advisors already on the payroll. All right, the other thing is we are rehashing things that have been rehashed before, redundant, repetitive things on the MRC, just over and over, round in circles. These things have all been talked about before. One thing that wasn't talked about was the abalone report cards triggering anything. Remember, the abalone surveys, they only count abalones that are 4 inches or larger. If it's 4 inches or less, they don't count it. They don't measure, but they don't count anything that's 4 inches or less. There are a lot of those. They do not look under the shelves. They do not look under the rocks or in the crevices. Only that are out there readily available. Though studies are flawed. There is no reason to do anything. The other thing is that the MPAs are a failure, according to the Bryn School, because all you're going to get is a credit if you have a no-fishing zone in your area. They demonstrated that very thoroughly, that this certification, well, gee whiz, wait a minute, we have no-fishing zones and spillover. We don't need that. And the urchin fishery, biggest one in Santa Barbara, wants nothing to do with it. We don't need it. Our consumers don't care. It's a scam, a scheme to create jobs for some little body, another committee to certify. Pay us money. We'll take care of you. There is no way that a certification is going to stimulate any market price. The free market does not determine on advertisement. It is supply and demand. Save my time.
This completes number 12. Number 13, receipt of federal agencies' informational items. Dr. Kevin Chu was here yesterday and is not here today, and I believe, commissioners, we have nothing on item 13. So I'm looking at you, and we'll go on to number 14, receipt of legal counsel informational items. Rick, nothing on number 14. We have one speaker card on number 14. Mr. Weakland, you have 1:40. All right. Number 15, new business. There are two items of new business that I'm aware of, commissioners. We received a petition to list the blackback woodpecker. It is a forest species that occurs in burned forest habitats. Pursuant to the Title 14 requirements and the Fish and Game Code requirements, the staff evaluated it for completeness and has forwarded it to the department. So that's just an informational item for you in terms of new business. Sherry Fonbuena or Adriana Shea, I don't know, one of you has some more. So looks like it's going to be Adriana.
Just a quick update. The filing period was supposed to close this Friday, which is a furlough Friday, so it's been extended until this Monday. Currently, we've received two applications, and we're expecting a third. And we're wondering from you all, commissioners, if you'd like to extend the comment or the open filing period to address those markets that we weren't able to reach because we couldn't pay for them because we had no state budget.
I
They're conferring.
They're working on it.
Because of the results we've had, I think that we should extend the application period for
45 days.
Yeah, another 45 days.
I'm
got our 45.
Yeah, I'm just shocked that nobody wants to come to work for the state of California.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable, the working conditions here and the opportunities that abound. It's shocking.
But
I guess we'll wait a little longer.
So is that is the rest of the
time? God, was that cynical. So
for an additional 45 days, and then we will we'll go ahead and post on those other public opportunity websites.
By the way, on the applications we do have, did you say two? Two or three?
We're expecting one more, so for a grand total of three.
Okay. When do we see those?
Whenever you like.
Well, I'm ready to look at them. I mean, I don't know about anybody else.
You know, would you want to look at them and, I don't know, legal counsel, do we need to do this publicly? I'm not sure of the protocol here for how we can release these and have a discussion.
Rick, are you with
us?
In the past, it was private, if I remember correctly.
In the past, the applications were sent out to the commissioners, and then we had sub-commissioner meetings to interview and then make recommendations to the full commission. That's what we did in the past.
Okay. So unless I hear that that's an issue with Rick, we can email those to you or scan them, email them to you next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the new business items. We have one speaker card on this, Mr. Weekland.
Commissioner Paul Weekland, that's clear and convincing evidence that the response period for the MPA should be extended. That is all.
Saving his time.
Okay, that concludes the speaking time on number 15, the public speaking on number 15. Number 16, announcement of results from executive session. Deputy Attorney General Rick Thalhammer.
When the commission met in executive session, they took action to approve the hearing officer's recommendation denying the appeal of Aaron Zanico, who was appealing the denial of his renewal application for a guide license. They took no other action with respect to any of the items on the agenda.
Thank you, Rick.
One speaker card, Mr. Paul Weekland.
No, thank you.
All right.
Are we on consent?
Yes, we're on the consent calendar. We have Mr. Weekland submit his speaker cards on numbers 17 and 18. You want to speak on those, Mr. Weekland?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Commissioners Paul Weekland, the adamant denial to extend the public comment period on the MPA program is in direct contrary and hypocrisy. When you look at the extensions that are being given to your buddies in aquaculture, it's just extension after extension, more comment, more data collection, more preferential treatment for this fledgling industry that is actually a scam. And so when you look at these things, the contradictions and hypocrisies are immense, and an extension for this MPA should go on because of the Farallon error alone. Stewart's Point error on the North Central shows that these problems keep creeping up, but you got to jam it through for your buddy, Benedict Arnold Schwarzenegger. That is all.
Okay, do I have a motion on the consent calendar?
I actually would recommend on the consent calendar for A, B, C, and D, these are all 180-day extensions, And I would recommend we modify those to 90-day extensions because at some point in time we may quit extending these and just terminate these leases, so I don't want to continue them on forever. So I would recommend approval of the consent calendar except changing all four from 180-day extensions to 90-day extensions.
Any other commissioners?
No, I have no problems with that as long as we have a legal. We have to pull them out of consent. Okay. Or something like
Sonke, that. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, only in the spirit of informed decision making. 90 days because of the commission agenda and timeline to get things on the agenda. We'll have to have this item again then on no later than the December commission meeting, just so you know. And so we'll be working with staff to make sure we get these back on your agenda for December.
Okay, then I have a motion for the consent calendar as amended. I need a second.
Second.
Yeah, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
It's unanimous and should be recorded as such.
Commission follow-up. Staff is taking notes on these meeting items. We're putting the department's presentation regarding the issues on the December meeting. There are several others that our staff is taking note on. If you want to call our attention to any of those right now, please do so. But those are the ones that I'd like to point out. 21. Future meetings, November 17th. November 17th and 18th in Lake Natoma. December 15th and 16th in Santa Barbara.
Okay. Director McCammon.
Commissioner Rogers said something yesterday. I just wanted to follow up on it.
Can't hear you.
Commissioner Rogers mentioned something yesterday that I wanted to follow up on relative to scheduling, and that is the other stressors report that was given to you last month. So I don't know quite where we're going to put that in this.
You might explain, if we were to bring that up in November, and I know you're not going to be here, we don't want to be making any decisions without the president here. But anyway, you might explain how we would do that.
Well,
we need to get it on the calendar.
The other stressors report that I presented last month emanated from a request from NOAA Fisheries that you basically provide bag limit changes or eliminate bag limits and size restrictions on striped bass in the Delta and a non-native species, by the way. So we haven't responded. You asked for further information. We gave you the other stressors report as the further information for your decision about how you want to approach that issue. And frankly, we haven't responded. It's been 9 months now. So
I know this is an issue of sensitivity to the president. So I want to make certain that we don't put this on the agenda at a point that makes the president uncomfortable about that. So how do you want to do that?
I don't have a problem with it, putting on the agenda.
Okay, then what would the suggestion be? Then you would put it on for just discussion,
further discussion.
Without, you know.
Okay. Yeah, this would be for receipt and discussion of the department report.
Right. It's just receipt and discussion.
And no anticipated action.
Right. Correct. Well, no action.
Right. No.
Got it. Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Okay.
I got one thing. I'm sorry.
Commissioner Rogers has one more thing.
I'm sorry, guys. I meant to ask this question earlier on the consent calendar item, so I need to ask the department. Explain to me one more time on the wild trout, adding these as wild trout waters to the list of wild trout waters and the list of heritage trout waters. What's the difference in there, and what's the effect of that?
Well, this is in compliance with a statute that was passed quite a few years ago now, and it requires us to review the state's lakes and streams for inclusion and as designations for wild trout waters and heritage waters. The distinction typically is tends to specify them for catch and release fishing only once they're designated as such. And you have in your policy some guidance on how you view fishing opportunity to be provided under that designation. So this is the compliance with that statute. We're required to give you an update, and you typically approve or modify those set of recommendations.
But and is there a difference between a wild trout water and a heritage trout water?
Yeah, there is, and for the life of me, it escapes me right now.
Is it essentially catch and release, though? Is that the essential designation versus right now where it's in your normal bag limit, whatever it is, trout limit in those waters?
There are subtleties, but yeah, the idea is what the purpose is that designation, the real focus is to say we're not going to use hatchery product typically here, and we're going to focus on sustaining these waters for wild production and fish and adjust the harvest pressure such that it's sustainable in a completely wild thing. Heritage trout's a little different. Some of that's recovery of past fisheries, and there's slightly different rules that we typically use. But my recommendation is we have a great person in the inland fishery staff. This is his life, and I think if you're interested, maybe at the next meeting we can tee up, or when you're available, an information on the background. Somebody's much more qualified to speak to this than I am.
Actually, you know, if he just call me.
Okay, I can do that.
15-minute phone call probably.
Have Mr. Bloom call you, and you and he can talk for trout for hours.
That'd be great. Right. Thanks.
This commission meeting is adjourned.